You shouldn't wear a mask. You should be wearing a mask.
Mixed messaging.
Confusion. Uncertainty.
Getting answers.
Trusted voices.
55 KRC, the talk station.
The 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Monday. End of your wait for the month of August.
Say, $50 the Smales kid picks his nose.
Okay, you got it. $50 more says he eats. You're on.
Yes. Spalding from Caddyshack. I came in this morning and I said, Joe, you find that audio from Caddyshack where they're talking about making a bet on Spalding, whether he picks his nose and then eats it. He's like, what are you talking about? I said, you didn't see the video of Joe Biden? And he said, no, I didn't. I did. I was on total news blackout over the weekend. I was trying to enjoy myself over the weekend. I get that. So I forwarded the link. If you haven't seen it, it is would you call that a national embarrassment, Joe? Does that fall into the realm of national embarrassment? Add it to the list. Okay, that will be a yes. And if you have no idea, like some of the people who responded to my Facebook post, it was rather cryptic. And I'll get to the point here in a second if you don't know what I'm talking about. But that was the 30th. Here's what I put on Facebook. After contemplation, he ate the chin booger. Wow, I just saw that. Eye bleach, worry. Some people were like, did somebody hijack your Facebook account? What the hell are you talking about? Oh, well, my friend Tom in Florida went ahead and posted a link to what I was talking about. If you don't know what I'm talking about, sit down. Joe Biden's at the podium it appears he's at a press conference anyway. He has something on his chin. And one of his staff, I mean, they let him go out there. Think about this. They let him go out there with this fleck of what appears very much to be a piece of egg. So, yes, the commander-in-chief, leader of the free world, had egg on his face. But anyway, they allowed him to get up to the podium with this clearly visible chunk on his face. And so they passed him a note, sir, you have something on your chin. After reading the note, and at one point, Biden does flip the note around so that it is clearly visible to members of the press who obviously, took a photograph of what the note said. He pauses, reaches up to his chin, wipes his chin in the exact spot where the little piece of what appears to be egg is. It's then on his fingers. He looks at his fingers for a moment. This is the after contemplation, and then ate it. Yes, ate whatever was on his face on television in front of the world for all to see. He just says you voted for him. Oh, wow. That's, I would say that's hard to swallow, but that would be even grosser. Anyhow, 749-5500, #550 on AT&T phones. Or 800-823-TALK. If you care to call, I'd love to hear from you. My name is Brian Thomas. You have tuned to the 55 KRC Morning Show. Sure, appreciate that. And recall that I'd like to remind folks, anytime you can't listen live, just find the podcast, 55KRC.com. Of course, you heard top of the hour news. It's also on my blog page this morning. Buddy Creek closed at Ebenezer. And I apologize to all my friends on the west side. That was a route often taken by me on my way to Oak Hills High School up the hairpins, and I couldn't get there right now. I'd have to go around, the route. Anyhow, good luck to you, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from Chuck Ingram all morning. Well, that's one way of putting it. Did you hear the top of the air news? They say cursing, involved delays and runarounds and cursing. I thought that was kind of a cute recognition for folks to be dealing with that this morning. Anyway, best of luck to you. Coming up on the 55 KRC Morning Show, of course, it being Monday, my dad's coming up at 7:05 for the Monday morning spleen vent. And we well, it being Monday, it's Money Monday with Allworth Financial's Brian James. Well, today we'll be talking about key details in the infrastructure bill. I've got those in front of me. Does anybody think they can get through 2,700 pages on the rushed schedule that Chucky Schumer made up? Yeah. We've got to get it done right now. Well, the reason they want to get it done is because they're going to go on break. Nothing like interfering with vacation to get a giant 2,700-page bill through. Who could read that? And even a speed reader couldn't get through it. And if he could, he wouldn't contemplate it. He wouldn't be able to contemplate what it means. And remember, legislation quite often involves undoing, modifying, or changing other existing legislation. So if they want to incorporate a Green New Deal element and require you do X, Y, and Z in your business, that probably impacts other laws already on the books, which then need to be changed. So the new bill is going to refer to another bill. Pursuant to this amendment, subsection C, chapter 14, USC, blah, 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 is hereby modified. So, subparagraph A, the word the shall be, transformed to. And so you're staring at it. You go, well, this doesn't mean anything, right? Unless you've got a whole copy of the prior legislation in front of you so you can see what gets modified and what gets changed, which means 2,700 pages is not really 2,700 pages. It could be in the millions, depending on how many pieces of legislation have been changed by the 2,700 pages. Also, pause and contemplate this. You've heard our senators speak. You can have an opinion one way or another about their level of cognitive function. And they may be, and I will acknowledge, they may be geniuses on some areas of, the world, life, business. I'm sure each and every one of them has got their own level of expertise on some subject matter. 2,700 pages of what they characterize as infrastructure. Do you really believe that they sat down and wrote this in such a compressed period of time? Hell no, they didn't. They have staff and other people doing it. And a wealth, a treasure trove, an endless stream of lobbyists who are themselves, arguably, experts in some small segment of life. And they had their two cents in, and they, of course, drafted it. You think our senators read each and every line of a 2,700-page bill that just popped out on Sunday? The answer is, of course, no. Will they vote on it this week? More than likely. It's a frightening thing. At least I find it frightening. And that they will rush it through, and that's exactly what they're planning on doing. You know why? So they can hurry up and literally jam through. At least they're calling this. They're paying lip service to the notion it's bipartisan because you got a couple of rhinos working on it with the Democrats. And thanks to Mitch McConnell for voting it to get it out of committee, and so we can all see it. Is it going to pass the Senate? I have no idea. The way they've set it up, the way it's been reported in the media, the way that we've got these, handful of vocal Republican supporters talking about how great it is. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Republicans who might otherwise vote no on it. Got to get over that 60-vote threshold, though. We'll see how much of pressure is applied. But it's $3.5 trillion is the one that we've got to worry about next, because there isn't going to be any Republican support for that one. There isn't going to be a pressure that can be placed on Republicans that will turn that one into, reality. But then again, they're going to try to shove it through on budget reconciliation, which will only require 50 votes plus Kamala Harris' vote to make it 51. Can the Democrats get all 60 votes they need for a life-transforming, a country-transforming, an ideological transformation bill, $3.5 trillion of debt, reconciliation, shove it through. And hurry up and do it, because we've got to go on vacation. Been working so hard. Look at that bill we just put together, 2,700 pages. Folks, if the $1 trillion infrastructure bill, and that's roughly the price tag, comes in at 2,700 pages, can you imagine the length, the size, the library filling size of a $3.5 trillion economy, life, country transforming bill, what that would look like? And I'll ask again, kind of what I led off with, will anybody read it first? 515, 55 KRC, the talk station. You better get your school supplies and maybe your bacon. Shortages are coming your way. First USA Insulation, a wonderful product that'll save you money and pay for itself. Provide. The 55 Care CD Talk Station. It is Monday, like it or not. Come on, man. Come on, man. It's like Joe Biden theme song. Come on, man. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Yeah, I mentioned school supplies from USA Today. They said there may be shortages. School supplies may be harder to find and may sell out. They're recommending you go out there before the sales and before the tax-free holidays and before whatever. Make your decisions earlier on because, backpacks, sneakers, apparently gadgets, stationery, all may be in short supply. This from one man with one opinion. Guy named Neil Saunders, interviewed by USA Today. Global Data Retails, where he is from. While we're unlikely to see apocalyptic shortages, he said the continued pressure on supply chains means that not all retailers are going to get optimal amount of supplies. And what this means is you, the consumer, are going to have fewer choices, and you may not be able to get exactly what you're looking for, especially if you wait to the end of the so-called back-to-school season, which is in full force. I mean, I guess, Joe, when your kids go back, like 3 weeks? 19th. Oh. It's all picked through already? Oh, see, Joe Streck, a real-life example of exactly what I'm talking about. So, supplies, not exactly full. Fortunately for the Strecker family, they got it done over the weekend, but you shouldn't really, I guess, put it off. I mean, if his experience locally is generally reflected in what is being said here in the USA Today's reporting, then we've got maybe a problem on your hand. According to the National Retail Federation's annual survey, you, the consumer, plan to spend a record amount on both school and college supplies. This number kind of blew me away. I had a lot more respect for my parents when I was a kid. Families with children in elementary through high school plan on spending an average of, just under $850 on school items. Apparently 59 more than last year. Total back-to-school spending expected to reach a record, oh my word, $37.1 billion, up from $33.9 billion last year. Truly kind of puts in perspective the idea that, you know, well, free public education really isn't free, is it? Let's see here. Inflationary pressures also have an impact on this. 6% inflation in apparel. And you should expect anywhere from 10 to 15% more than last year. And fewer discounts. That's the other thing. When you don't have a lot of supply coming in, there's no incentive for a retailer to offer a reduction in price. The demand is there. So there are tax holidays. I remember those. That was mentioned in the article. I don't know when if we have one on that. But again, get ahead of the curve if you haven't gone out already. And take my executive producer's advice. Better get out there soon. Also, and this one, frightening reality, folks. And you know, California has a way of impacting all of us. It is the epicenter of every new regulation and rule, whether it's environmental or otherwise. And they have such a massive economy that businesses capitulate to what California demands rather than just say, you know what, California, I have a massive middle finger for you. I will not capitulate and cave to your demands. Therefore, you're just going to have to live without my products. One of these products now, bacon. Back in 2018, in their infinite wisdom, the voters of California decided to insist on a specific size pen for pigs
idiots
to be raised
idiot
in.
Things because they're idiots.
So you got a pig pen, right? And most of the pig pens are not big enough to meet California's regulatory standards. And since that's the case, there may be no bacon or other pork in California coming up. Beginning of the year, California is going to begin enforcing an animal welfare proposition approved in 2019 requiring space for, it's not just pigs, it's chickens and calves. National veal and egg producers are optimistic that they can meet the standards, but only 4% of hog operations actually comply with the new rules. And they're saying unless you get a court injunction stopping this thing from going ahead, then California will lose almost all of its pork supply, which comes mostly from Iowa. They say there's hardly any time left to comply. They say it's hard to see how the pork industry can adequately supply California, which consumes 15% of all pork produced in the country. It's a little economics lesson. Think about this. Like I said, it's the buying power and the number of Californians. Now, I know that number is dropping because it's becoming an unlivable state and people are moving. But it's like the eighth biggest economy on the planet, one state. And this is how California gets others to capitulate into its rules and regulations and micromanagement of business. Fine. You don't want to do business with us? Don't. You got to walk away from the eighth largest economy on the planet. Now step back from that and let's look down on a global scale. Think about Walt Disney and how it capitulates to China. Would they rather have 350 million or 340 million Americans, or would they rather have 1.4 billion Chinese? Yeah, we'll do a little capitulation and backbending for the Chinese because we want their markets. This is what's happening here with California, and it's been that way for a long time. According to the reporting, California restaurants and groceries use about 255 million pounds of pork a month, but its farms, California's farms, produce only 45 million pounds, leaving them about 205 million pounds short every month. That's why they turn to Iowa, where, well, they're not going to get any pork anymore. National Pork Producers Council, wait for this one. They've asked the U.S. Department of Agriculture for federal aid to help retrofit the hog facilities. Where? I guess in Iowa and wherever the National Pork Producers Council has pork farms. So you, my friends here in the greater Cincinnati area or wherever you happen to be listening, if you're not in California, guess who you get to pay for? Because California passes a rule. It looks like the Department of Agriculture may very well pay to retrofit farms so they can comply with California. Does anybody else have a rule like this? No, just one state. They suggest that it'll add 15% more per animal to comply with California's new rules and regs, which means it's going to be expensive. Now, here's a fun fact for the Californians, and I actually would like to see this happen. If half, just half, of the pork supply in California was lost because of this rule, bacon prices would go up 60%, turning a $6 package into almost $10. So California requires 24 square feet of space for the pigs. Apparently, 14 feet is typical in Iowa. This is even better. All right, so let's say you don't comply with the California rules. California, apparently these rules create challenges for slaughterhouses because the pigs all go to a slaughterhouse. What size pen were the slaughtered pigs in before they were slaughtered? Nobody knows. So they're going to have to put a process in place so they can track specific cuts of meat to make sure that that specific cut of meat has met California regulatory guidelines as opposed to the piece of meat right next to it, which came from a smaller pen and therefore can't go to the state of California. You think this is going to add any cost to the price of pork, folks? Welcome to an inflationary pressure, artificial, brought about by the actions of one single state. 527 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Fasten Pro Roofing for outstanding roofers. The only people you need are Fasten Pro. You want to be able to trust the people you're working with in .531 coming up at 532, 55 KRC Talk Station. On my Oak Hills High School class of 1983 Facebook page, my friend Chris here, who I went to school with for all those years, matter of fact, my entire time of school, elementary all the way through graduation, posted a reminder that yesterday was the 40th anniversary of MTV. And, of course, anybody in the class of 1983 remembers when that one hit. Joe and I were just...
Grandpa.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, anyway, just reminiscing a little bit with Joe Strecker about that one. Let's go to the phones, get Tom's call this morning. Hey, Tom, happy Monday to you.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, we were rebels back then. Now we're old geezers, right?
Yeah, we were the ones that we're the ones that grumble because I remember when MTV used to play music.
Right.
What the hell's become of it?
That's a regular complaint that comes up for me all the time. So.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
we've
I'm
got.
Coming,
don't
I'm
forget, Tom.
Down Coleraine Hill and past Mount Airy Forest, and man, they could use some odor extra. There's a strong, strong skunk smell. My God, it was horrible.
It does happen.
I'm calling today about a subject near and dear to my heart, right on the top of the list of things that are important. Of course, that's bacon. And they're screwing with our food again. And you think the exodus coming out of Mexico up into the United States is bad. The lines coming out of California are going to be astronomically longer. You start messing with people's food more and more, and then you're really getting right into what, well, I mean, it's one of the most important things that people have in their life, being able to eat and the food they like and being able to get the food they like. And it's just, like you said, another example of government just screwing with us, and it's needless. There's no need to do this garbage. It's a pig, for crying out loud. We're going to slaughter it and eat it. What's the problem? I don't understand why these people got to be so stupid.
Well, they did give the voters of the state of California an option on that one, and it overwhelmingly passed. So the well-being of animals, the 14-foot pen versus the 24-foot pen, I don't know how much of an impact it has over the life of obviously something that is being created and taken care of for the purpose of human consumption. So, but it certainly will affect us. Hey, listen, you know, we've mentioned many times here, obesity, the second leading cause of preventable death. You would think that, you know, more than focus on whether or not you get a vaccine, since obesity is one of the comorbid conditions that leaves so many people dead after COVID-19 infections, that they'd be focusing on that. But, you know, freedom to choose what you want to eat is one thing that we thoroughly enjoy in the United States of America. We do have an abundance of food, and why should we be told what to eat? This is a personal life choice. You let me make up my own mind. I'd advocate for that all day long. So they're not telling us what to eat. They do try to tell you in school, but no one apparently pays attention to that because we do have a very serious health crisis on our hands as a consequence of consumption. So what might they do? Yeah, they might alter the rules and regulations to make it a little more difficult for you to get the type of food you want. I'm sure they'll cloak it in environmentalism or alternatively animal welfare. Ultimately, it'll reduce the amount consumed naturally because, right, if it takes 14 feet to grow X number of hogs, and then it's got to go to 24 feet per hog, clearly you are not going to have as many hogs produced. The number's going to go down. Either that or the farm's going to get bigger. Which do you think is going to happen? 535 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Speaking of awesome things to eat, Turf Club, go there. You got no excuse not to go there. Make a trip. If it's out of your way, I'd say it's worth the trip. In fact, Five 40 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. A very happy Monday to you. Spleen Vent Monday coming up at 7:05, and you can't listen. That doesn't mean you can't listen later. Just go to the podcast page, 55KRC.com. In the meantime, let's do Stack of Stupid. Joe, this one obviously caught Joe's eye. Right there at the top, in all caps with a double exclamation point, WTF. That means WikiLeaks Task Force around here, because you can't say what it really means because of FCC. Baltimore woman arrested after police found the starved and decomposing bodies of her niece and nephew in the trunk of her car at a traffic stop. 33-year-old Nicole Johnson charged with first-degree child abuse resulting in death after the gruesome discovery, according to Baltimore police, Baltimore County specifically police. According to the charging documents obtained by the Baltimore Sun, Johnson pulled over about 11 p.m. for allegedly driving without a license with fake temporary tags and registration, told her car would have to be towed. She told the officer, according to the filing, quote, it don't matter. I won't be here in 5 days. Y'all going to see me on the news making my big debut. Close quote. Officers, as you might imagine, smelled something peculiar as Johnson was taking items out of her car. She tried to cover up to cover a suitcase with a blanket as she removed it before a body was exposed. Johnson tried to flee but was quickly apprehended. Children later identified as her niece and nephew, 7-year-old Jocelyn Johnson and 5-year-old Larry O'Neill. Severely malnourished. Girl weighed only, she was seven, she only weighed 18 pounds. The 5-year-old younger brother, 20 pounds. According to the charging documents, the doctor said it would have taken several months of malnourishment to obtain those weights. Johnson allegedly admitted to detectives that she'd been driving around with their corpses in the trunk for months. May 2020, Johnson told investigators she hit Jocelyn several times, causing the girl's head to hit the floor. Johnson then allegedly put the child in a suitcase in the trunk of her car. She then said 2 months ago, little Larry went to sleep after feeling tired, never woke up. She put his body in a tote in the trunk next to his sister. She told detectives she'd been responsible for the children since 2019 when her sister moved from Maryland to Ohio and could no longer care for them. Unbelievable. Currently being held at the Baltimore County Detention Center, Townsend, Maryland. No mention about bond.
Dude, what the hell?
No kidding. 33-year-old woman arrested at Pike Place Market after allegedly pepper spraying a woman and her child in an elevator. All right. Police showed up at Pike Place.
What the hell?
Report of an assault 4:30 in the afternoon found a 32-year-old pushing a stroller containing a bottle of bleach and carrying a can of pepper spray. She was taken into custody without incident. Victim later told police that she'd been in an elevator with the 32-year-old when she heard the woman swearing to herself. When she asked if the woman was okay, the woman pepper sprayed her and her child. The 32-year-old told police she sprayed the victims because she's, quote, in a high-risk category, close quote, for contracting COVID-19 and was concerned about the Delta variant. Hey, Joe, was it Fauci over the weekend that said bear spray or pepper spray was a good deterrent for the Delta variant? Probably on CNN. I didn't see it reported, but, you know, considering the information that comes out of Fauci's mouth sort of changes from time to time, wouldn't shock me at all. Well, Joe seemed to think that maybe it was reported on CNN, which is why no one saw it. Possible. Anyway, the woman booked into the King County Jail on investigation of assault and an assault of a child. No additional information is available. I'm thinking there was more going on in her mind than the Delta variant of COVID-19. We go to Louisiana, where a man's been sentenced to 15 years behind bar after admitting to having sex with a teenage girl whose bedroom he secretly lived in. Seem to recall reading about this when the time he got arrested, Joe, so now we've got a sentencing. 36-year-old Jonathan Rosemoine, arrested last September after the 15-year-old girl's parents found him hiding in her closet. I do remember this. This in Spring Hill, Florida. Pleaded guilty Wednesday last to charges of sex with a minor and was going to have to register as a sex offender. When he was arrested, the victim told deputies he'd been living off and on in her bedroom for 5 weeks. Deputy found Rosemoine still hiding in the closet when they showed up at the house, according to the statement, which said the suspect would hide in the closet when the victim's parents were home, only coming out when they left for work. Rosemoine further advised numerous sexual encounters had also occurred in his van, which was parked in the proximity of the victim's house. He admitted to cops that he traveled to Florida on several occasions to have sex with a victim who he met online in a chatting app. The child, the 15-year-old, referred to Rosemoine as her boyfriend, told him she was 18 but admitted to being 15 before they met in person. So he was well aware at the time of the encounter, which makes him eligible and the winner of
the biggest douche of the universe. In all the galaxies, there's no bigger douche than you.
Not today, anyway.
You've reached the top, the pinnacle of douchedom. Good going, douche. Your dreams have come true.
Yeah, they'll be loving him when he gets there. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. We'll continue this. 550, happy Monday. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Back to the stack is stupid. It always gets to get a kick out of this. Faith in journalism reduced yet another notch. We took the antics of a RTL reporter. This is in Germany, named Susanna Olin. So I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news. This happened a week or so ago, but that Germany just got inundated with flooding. It was buildings all knocked over, and it just was awful, devastating. Couple of hundred people died in these floods. So naturally, you've got news reporters like Susanna Olin there covering the events from the street. Someone shot a secret video of her. She was seen with her back turned to the camera on a street that was just, again, inundated with muck and mud and people displaced from their homes. The town of Bad Münstereifel. She is caught on video scooping mud off the ground and smearing it on her face and clothes. This while she was covering the nationwide cleanup efforts. Oh, yeah. So RTL, the company that she works for, this reporting outlet of the news service, had a video up on her that has, of course, now been deleted, but is still out there because we're talking about the internet, shows her mud-streaked, begging the public to aid in the cleanup. She is seen in this video holding a spade and wearing a bucket hat, Wellington boots, thick gloves with a shirt, with her sleeves rolled up. Well, that article, the now deleted article, which I suppose had the video in it, lauded her for helping, in their words, lend a hand supporting the local people. Well, after the gorilla video of her faking it made the rounds on the internet, and several hundred thousand people have seen this one. The RTL News had issued a statement. Our reporter's approach clearly contradicts journalistic principles and our own standards. We therefore gave her leave of absence on Monday after we heard about it. She since apologized. Her apology not sitting well with, well, anyone.
Not a douche!
a Louisiana groom, as in bride and groom, allegedly shot a friend in his wedding party because he thought the man was having an affair with his new wife. This happened on their wedding day. Now, pause for a moment. If you think your buddy's having an affair with your soon-to-be wife, do you go ahead and marry her, or do you try to figure it out up front? Just a rhetorical question. 30-year-old Devin Josie Jones and his wife riding with the victim after the wedding on Saturday when they hit a traffic on I-10 in Louisiana. Two men started arguing in the car around 11 p.m. Jones then pulled out a firearm and chased the friend between cars along the highway, shooting and wounding him in the leg. Jones's wife, meanwhile, stopped an ambulance and told personnel her husband was trying to kill her before barricading herself inside. Jones then tried to force his way inside of the ambulance. Guess he was trying to kill her. Police caught up to Jones on foot. He was arrested. Bystander was also wounded in the hand after a bullet, went through the rear glass of his vehicle. Victims airlifted to University Medical Center in New Orleans. Stable condition. Investigation is ongoing. The list of charges the man faces has not yet been released yet. They're substantial, though. 17-year-old man shot and killed in a food court, Macon, Georgia. This happened on Sunday afternoon.
Just walk away.
That's the best advice one can give. County Coroner Leon Jones confirmed the identity of the teen as Quintavius Moore. There's a mouthful. You call him Quentin for short? Quintavius? Q. Sounds like something from a Bond movie, Joe. Anyway, Jones said Moore was shot multiple times in the mall. Also in his body. Bibb County Sheriff's Office told local news the fight had broken out in the food court and gotten physical before the shooting. Moore taken to local hospital where he was pronounced dead. Police department did not respond, but did say they would provide updates in the future. And finally, we can get one more in before we take a break. St. Petersburg, Florida police responded to the scene of a shooting this one Saturday. Found a 27-year-old mom dead inside her vehicle and her two children still alive. And in the police's description, terrified, one can only imagine. 5:30 p.m., St. Petersburg Police Department said is when it happened. Their spokesperson said the officers arrived on the scene and found Joanna Pekka, deceased inside her vehicle, suffering what appears to be a apparent gunshot wound. Her two young children, unharmed but terrified, as I mentioned. Quote, two young children tonight are going to bed without their mother, and we would really like to get justice for those who are responsible, the person or the people who are responsible for her death. No suspects arrested. Investigation is ongoing. Wow, and of course, they've got their version of Crime Stoppers down in Florida, and they're looking for help. Can you imagine the trauma that those poor kids are going to have to go through the balance of their life? 556, 55 Care CD Talk Station. I look forward to hearing from you. We've got lots to talk about coming up. $2 trillion coming your way, 2,700 pages, plus a whole stack of what some argue is contradictory advice from our friends at the CDC and Dr. Fauci. Yes, it's alive and well. Don't go away. Be back after the news.
Inflation is here.
Price increases.
Grocery stores, manufacturing.
What happens next?
Pay very close attention.
Will happen here on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Coming up on 606 at 55 KRC, the talk station. I hope you're having a very happy Monday. I hope you had a great weekend. My name is Brian Thomas. If you'd like to call, make a comment about anything going on in the world, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on your AT&T phone. Condolences, well, sort of like to my friends on the west side having to deal with that Muddy Creek Ebenezer train wreck situation. It's not really a train wreck. It's a mile and a half sewer line. So I'm sure things are going to be much better when it's over. But in the meantime, having grown up in Delhi and used that road more times than I even can think about remembering, I can't imagine the situation and how bad it's going to be for my friends over there. Anyway, best of luck to you. And, of course, Chuck Ingram will be reporting throughout the morning. To the extent it becomes problematic. Also problematic, came out over the weekend, 2,700 pages. Senate voted last week to take up the whole national infrastructure bill. At least that's what they're calling it. I guarantee you it's not all infrastructure. And, oh, look, yeah, $550 billion of it's infrastructure. The rest of it is, well, I'll leave it to you to decide. Can you read it before you vote on it? And the answer is resoundingly, hell no. Who could possibly do that? Well, good for the whys and wherefores, I did that in the last hour, but suffice it to say, just because it's 2,700 pages does not mean it is complete in the sense that it is one document existing in and of itself. So if you had time to read 2,700 pages, you can actually comprehend what's in it. No, you have to refer to a whole bunch of other legislation in order to comprehend a lot of what's in it, because much of what's in it results or is a consequence of changes to other laws that have been previously passed. So, yeah, go ahead and multiply 2,700 times what? However money. It's sort of a rhetorical statement there. Anyway, what do we know is in it? $110 billion for roads and bridges. $40 billion for bridges as the single largest dedicated bridge investment since the construction of the interstate highway system. Consider that. Now, that to me just signals a long time that we have just sort of let things fall apart, Brent Spence Bridge. Anyway, $39 billion for public transit. Allegedly, it's going to be used to modernize bus and subway fleets and bring new service to communities. Joe, you think it'll work out better than the sort of worked out over here when we gave them extra money and they were going to get it all sorted out? Sort of was going to sort it out. I'm sure this cash infusion will fix it. $5 billion for buying electric school buses and hybrids. This allegedly to reduce the reliance on school buses that run on diesel fuel. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just laughing because, you know, come on. It's an electric bus. It's got to rely on a charging station. Oh, look, $7.5 billion for electric vehicle charging stations. I'm sure one coming to a school near you to run that electric bus. Where's the electricity coming from that makes the bus go forward and backward? Don't pay attention to that. Oh, and on that note, there's a huge article I saw, I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal, behind the rise of U.S. solar power, a mountain of Chinese coal. Yeah, Chinese coal and coal emissions are outrageous, and they don't curb them at all. They continue to rely on something that, well, works for them. the reliability of coal versus, well, the wind and solar, which is exactly what they're using their coal-fired plants to generate electricity so they can make solar panels and sell them to us. So this is progress for them. They make truckloads of money off of us. And the reason we buy solar panels is because we are forced to because of, well, actions by our lords and masters. Again, impacting the economy in ways that the economy would never have been impacted, all in the name of allegedly saving the planet. So here in the United States, all right, we're going to have to rely on something less efficient than coal, natural gas, oil, nuclear, something that runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, doesn't rely on great weather. We're going to rely on something that is not nearly as effective as producing electricity, and we're going to get the materials from our arch enemy, China, in the name of saving the planet, and because we're buying these things through an artificial market that was created through legislation, we're creating additional carbon because of our demand. I'd say that's screwed up. I'd actually characterize it in a different way, but I'd lose my job. So, back to the infrastructure bill. And remember, this is just, you know, this is the tip of the iceberg. There's going to be a whole lot more in the $3.5 trillion life-changing, country-transforming reconciliation bill that's laying on Chuckie Schumer's desk, ready to be rammed down our throats with not a single Republican supporting it. $66 billion for passenger and freight rail. That one alone should just blow your mind. Money allegedly is going to be used to reduce Amtrak's maintenance backlog. See if Amtrak was actually a moneymaker. I don't know that they would have a maintenance backlog. They're allegedly going to improve Amtrak's 457-mile-long northeast corridor as well as other routes and make safety improvements at rail grade crossings. Will any of this cause people to use Amtrak more often? He asked rhetorically. I mentioned the $7.5 billion for vehicle charging stations, $17 billion for ports, $25 billion for airports, allegedly, in both cases, to reduce congestion and address, again, maintenance backlog. See, this whole infrastructure bill is to address maintenance backlogs, isn't it? Brent Spence Bridge. $55 billion for water and wastewater infrastructure, including funding to replace all of the nation's service lines that use lead pipe. How long has it been since we knew lead was a problem for, you know, our survival and that it caused, well, brain function problems and things of that nature? Decades, if not longer. Yep, still using lead water pipes. See, because we had to have things like, go ahead, fill in the blank with your favorite. Gee, what's the new shiny object we can give the people rather than replace something that we know is deadly? Ah, those lead pipes are fine. We'll just leave them alone. Just leave them alone. Ah, just kick it down the road. We know it's a problem. We're going to have to replace them someday. Yeah, I know, but we want a streetcar. We're going to go in debt to get something that nobody's going to use, and we're not going to fix what's already a problem for us. So it doesn't have to be a streetcar. You got some other bright and shiny object, thanks to your lord and masters, while they let other things fall apart. Boy, it's just not fun keeping something maintained when it doesn't result in you getting something new. I tend to disagree with that philosophy. I'd rather have maintained roads and bridges and not get more from government. If they could only just handle what they have been charged with rather than continuing in, well, at least in their minds, to deliver on new stuff and things. Gee, and what is the maintenance on the streetcar annually, too? That's one expense you can just point to, a regular annual fund and an expenditure that you are going to have to pay every single year to keep the damn thing running. You bury a pipe that's made out of lead. Does it require maintenance? Well, not if it's collapsed, but it sure is leaching lead into your drinking water. Just wait until 2021 when we pass the infrastructure bill. We'll get our money to do that ultimately. $65 billion to expand broadband access. Mostly rural areas and tribal communities. $21 billion for cleaning up Superfund and brownfield sites, which they have been at since the 1980s. Think about how many decades have gone through since Superfund came about. Used to do Superfund pollution coverage litigation when I was up in Chicago. Talk about fun stuff. Not. $73 billion for modernizing the nation's electric grid, expanding the use of renewable energy. There's that renewable energy again. Compliments of, yes, I'm sure, China and its coal plant production. So let's see what Steve's got since I've been railing on about pollution. Hey, Steve, welcome to the morning show and a very happy Monday to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I wish it was a happy Friday, but we'll take a happy Monday.
Give it time, Steve.
It's way, a couple of days time, it'll be here.
Yeah, time flies so fast. I mean, I'm going to wake up and it's going to feel like tomorrow, and we will be having the happy Friday conversation.
Well, I haven't decided yet. I might go to work with a Friday mindset, so we'll see how productive. Well, you never know.
Life's what you make it, Steve. You can do that.
I'm in my own little world there. when I'm on hold, I could talk about 100 different things when I continue to listen to you. But I've just got a comment. First of all, I really want to talk about China. It'll just take me a second.
Sure.
But I had to say about the electric school buses, that is just replacing a school bus that's already there. So when you've got your kids, it's like, okay, here's this massive bill. Oh, aren't we wonderful? Look at the nice new school bus picking them up as opposed to the 7-year-old school bus that was spewing carbon into the atmosphere.
But it worked.
Your kids are just still getting picked up on a school bus. It's not changing their life in any way.
No. No, and you know diesel engines, that's typically what school buses are. Those things last a long, long time when properly maintained. You know, so it was a working 7-year-old school bus that effectively got kids from point A to point B. No need to replace it, really. If it broke down and you were contemplating options, that's a different thing.
So you're talking about maybe the electric school bus might be like real expensive 6-7 years down the road.
You think?
Whatever. But here's what I wanted to talk about. China laughs their butts off at us because they are spewing so much pollution into the atmosphere, and we will send our version of Neville Chamberlain over there. John Kerry will go over there and come back with a treaty that says beginning in 2035 they will start reducing carbon pumped into the atmosphere.
Yeah, the Chinese.
He'll wave this around. And as long as they fly him over there in a nice airplane, put him up in a 5-star hotel, tell him how important he is, that's a victory for him. And he is just in hog heaven. So at about 2028, China will say, well, we can't meet those. We're going to push that to 2042. And it's just – it's rearranging furniture on the deck of the Titanic. And they are just laughing their butts off at us.
Steve, you summed it up quite nicely. I agree with you absolutely and completely. They think
maybe
we
I should have called in at 5:30 with my rant.
You can call anytime you want, Steve. You know the phone lines are always welcome to you and anybody else who's got a comment. Stay well, my friend. Yes, keep that Friday attitude even during the week. Life is heaven if you choose to make it so. It can be hell, too. It's entirely up to you. 617 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station, 749-5500. Monday. Like it or not, it's upon us. I do like the idea of, treating Friday with a Monday with a Friday attitude. Not always an easy thing to do. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to have Joe Strucker as my executive producer, and glad to be talking to my dad coming up at 7:05 for the Monday Morning Spleen Vent, and also Money Monday. Got some great topics with Brian James at 8:05. The infrastructure details, he'll have more of them. No, I don't think Brian's been able to pour through 2,700 pages yet either, but we'll find out what his analysis shows. U.S. economy, prospects looking bright until the Delta variant surge, and now they're talking about perhaps lockdowns. Panic time, and is there reason for it? I do know there's reason to call out the hypocrisy of the left. Rules for thee and not for me. It was kind of funny because I wrote that on the top of a couple of the articles that I have in front of me, reflecting that, well, the Democrats, as much as they scream at you about wearing masks when it's convenient for them to not wear masks in circumstances where they say we should be wearing masks, they don't. So the rules are for you and not for them. And I looked up this morning in the 5 o'clock hour, and the television's on, and one of the news channels, it's up there, had that on the right there as a graphic, rules for thee and not for me. And, of course, you can turn to, first off, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. She officiated a wedding at a 4-star hotel in the Adams Morgan neighborhood of Washington, D.C., where they have a mask crackdown thanks to her. Her order telling you to wear masks in indoor settings, even if you're vaccinated, The wedding reception photographs features hundreds of unmasked guests served by dozens of wait staff. And, of course, right there in the middle of it, Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser without a mask on. She was not sitting at the table designated for her during the wedding toast, did not wear a mask despite not actively eating or drinking either, because that would be the retort. Whoa. It's like John Kerry on an airplane. I was drinking my water, and that's why I had my mask off. No, apparently not. When she was asked about this to explain why she was maskless at an evening now legally obligated to enforce mask compliance, security got in the way of, the press asking her questions. It's amazing when you've got security guards there working for you and only you, not the general public like the police department. Pelosi also in trouble now. Pelosi, she's the, I don't want to call her mask Nazi, but she's the one that ordered the House side of the Capitol building to be masked while the Senate side isn't. So within the same confines, we have different rules applying. And, of course, she ignores her own rules, defied her own mask requirement, removing her face mask to swear in a new congressman. She administered the oath to Jake Elzey, Republican out of Texas. She could be heard asking the question, can we take off our masks just for the photo, close quote. This was a question that had asked been by one of the reporters. So she's asking it on behalf of everybody else. She then took her mask off, and that led everybody else to take their mask off. So they have a photo without masks on. Again, interior spaces of all House office buildings was her edict and mandate. Except when she is in charge, in which case she can take her mask off and give, a free pass to everybody else. Looks to me like there's a group of people in this swearing-in ceremony, all of which should be facing a $500 fine. 626, 55 KRC, the talk station, got a Sean Hannity morning update. Coming up after I mentioned the VA, my friends at the VA, they want you veterans to sign up for your VA benefits. And I did run into a veteran at my last listener lunch who got some awesome hearing aids from the VA. He said, boy, I really am glad I got the VA behind me. He had a real problem with hearing, and I .630 right now, F55KRCD Talk Station. Happy Monday. Do have some local stories to get to before I jump back to the phone. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. It's started. If you haven't noticed already, we're going to go to Oxford for this one. Miami University, a popular bar up there, four students requiring proof of vaccination to get in. It's Brick Street in Oxford, posted on Instagram that they will require proof of vaccination, evidence of a negative COVID test, or evidence of a positive antibody test. Well, at least they give you credit for having COVID with a positive antibody test. They say this, it's their goal of remaining at full capacity with no restrictions to celebrate a new beginning with all of you. Miami students returning to campus August 23rd. Over 20,000 students attended the university in 2019, of course. They said it's a doubling of the population of Oxford. When school's out, half the population's gone. So, anyhow, can anybody answer the question? Is there a uniform proof of vaccine card? I've seen so many different ones online. They're floating around. And I know people can get fined for presenting, like, for example, a couple of folks presented false documentation to an airline. So I guess that violated FAA rules. But how does one know if you got a valid COVID-19 test or not? I mean, ask your teenagers how easy it was. Notice I said was because they did it. How easy it was for them to get the fake ID that they're carrying around. Oh, you didn't know that, did you? Yeah, go online. You can get them. Ship them over to you from China. It'll look like a real one. And consider this also. Okay, you're the guy standing at the door checking IDs. This has always perplexed me. You're the one charged with checking IDs, right? Got to be 18 or 21 to enter the bar. Whatever the rule is. All right, now we're going to add on top of the COVID-19 proof or antibody proof, etc. Now, you got some out-of-state driver's license. Do you know what, Joe, have you ever seen, for example, an Iowa driver's license? Could you pick one out of a lineup? No. So if you got something that looked reasonably official, even though it did not mirror that of an Iowa driver's license, and you hand it to the guy at the front door, what's he going to do? I'm sorry, I'm an expert in Iowa driver's license. This does not appear to be compliant. Okay, ignore that part. Well, they got holograms and this, that, and the other thing, and maybe there's a database you can cross-reference it, but medical records? The guy at the front door of the bar in Miami is not entitled to know what your internal, your personal medical records are, your personal health information. Now, if you got to give that up to go into the bar, fine, but what does a COVID ID or what does valid proof of antibodies look like? You don't think that can be forged? And do you think this bar in this Brick Street place in Oxford is going to be in a position to fine or otherwise penalize you if you present false identification at the door? Seems to me kind of a joke. Anyhow, I'm sure you're shocked to know that some people would lie and say that they have antibodies or present a false document in order to just avoid the hassle of being, you know, having to choose a different restaurant or bar to go to. Kentucky State Police have identified the remains of a woman they found in Lloyd's Wildlife Management Area in Crittenden. 31st of July, officers got a call regarding human remains. Very wooded area where they were found. She was identified as Autumn Patterson, 34, of Ghent, Kentucky. No foul play suspected, according to the Kentucky State conclusions. State police, rather. She was reported missing July 6th to the Dry Ridge Police Department. Death investigation being handled by the Kentucky State Police and the Dry Ridge Police Department. So we got time to get one call in here. Let's see what William's got. Hey, William, welcome to the program. Happy Monday to you.
Good morning. I am calling regarding the streetcar and the grant had to be paid back if we didn't complete it. How
yes.
much was that grant?
50. 50 million.
6 million?
50.
50.
Yep.
And how much is it going to cost before we pay to keep it running?
The debt service on the 100 million we borrowed, William?
Yes.
I'm going to go with an excrement pile of money. How's that? I don't know the exact figure, but if you borrow $100 million over, I guess, probably 20 years or 25, let's say you can do the interest rate points. Let's say they got a good rate on it at the time and it was a 4% loan, then you could work the math out over time to determine what the total overall nut would be. But, yeah, and along the way, of course, you've got operation and maintenance expenses, which don't disappear either. So interest on the debt. Obligation to pay the federal government back if we don't run it as we are ordered to, and then of course maintenance and upkeep on something that doesn't even draw a human being. Does that sum it up for you enough?
We should have just walked away from the grant
and paid. Yeah.
Fine.
Yep.
All right.
I agree with you completely, William. Absolutely. Give them their 50 back or negotiate. Oh, real quick on negotiations, I just saw yet another article. You get a mask mandate or you get a vaccination mandate from the federal government, say you must be vaccinated in order to work in this federal job. You're dealing with a lot of unions. I brought this up a bunch last week. Yet one more union has popped its head up and said, whoa, that interferes with our collective bargaining agreement. If you're going to ask that from us, we're going to open up the negotiations. How about that? Go to the federal government. If you had an elected official that had a huevos, could go to the federal government and say, listen, we've got some problems here in the city of Cincinnati. No one's riding this stupid thing that we built, and we're in trouble if we don't run it as you have directed. Think of the environmental damage you're doing. How's this for a point? Because we have to use electricity to run the streetcar. And I don't care where the electricity came from. Some of it at least came from a natural gas burning plant. That electricity would be unused if it weren't for the streetcar. So we're doing environmental damage, running the thing around empty all the time. Remember, we did that during the pandemic. Now, we can't stop it because that would run afoul of the federal rules. We'd have to give our money back. So we wasted tremendous amounts of, dollars and more specifically, electricity and maintenance costs for something that people weren't even allowed to ride. We do the dumbest things as human beings. It's just amazing. 6:37 right now. Got another one. And 6:40 at 55 KRCD Talk Station, about 20 minutes from now after top of the hour news. I'm going to hear from my dad, Jerry Thomas, doing the Monday Morning Spleen Vent. And, of course, the 8 o'clock hour, we get Money Monday. And some real cool topics for that. Very good learning experience you get on a Money Monday. Let's go to the phones. Guys, promised William he'd be first. He will be. Lawrence, hang on a second. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Hey, William, thanks for holding and welcome to the program.
Brian, good morning to you. How you doing today?
I'm well, man. I'm happy to be able to say that. I sure hope you and your family can say the same.
So far, so good. Other than it being Monday, but
well,
hey,
yeah.
I have a question. You know what? What are these rules? These passports, if you will. Who are they intended to protect? The vaccinated from the unvaccinated, or the unvaccinated from the vaccinated? Because more and more news comes out every single day that transmissibility from one who contracts the disease that is vaccinated is just as high as one unvaccinated who contracts the disease.
They keep saying along those lines, though, that if you are vaccinated and you do contract it, that your symptoms will be far less likely to hospitalize you. I guess that's the
wait,
point.
Wait a minute, Brian. Did you just say they say?
Yeah, I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Sorry for that.
Stay tuned, Brian. Yeah. We'll see how this plays out.
I know. Trust me, man. Trust me. The general public is painfully aware of the dance that Fauci and the CDC and the minions are trying to throw at us. And I think that the administration finally is realizing that these seemingly psychotic switches in instructions are driving people away from getting vaccinated.
I mean, I would agree 100%.
When you say you're still going to get it, but it won't be as bad, you're like, nah, the hell with it. Why even bother? You know? So,
yeah.
Appreciate the points, William. Excellent. Very, very subtle, but very, very much appreciated. Let's see what Lawrence has got. Hey, Lawrence, thanks for calling this morning and a very happy Monday to you, sir.
Hey, thanks, Brian. What are you? I was calling because I didn't know how much visibility you had on this particular issue with the school board, I guess, throwing their administrator under the bus for negotiating this Metro deal.
Yep.
And the extra buses. I'm thinking about something here. I'm a Cincinnati public school graduate, and just as an adult in the city of Cincinnati, there's only about two public high schools with a third possibly that I would even consider sending my kids to in the first place, right? So I can see maybe those two or three schools perhaps getting extra service, but the rest of them, it's kind of like, for what? I mean, they're all failing. So, like, what, you want to pick a program that you want to go fail at?
So what, Lawrence, if I get where you're coming from, I know the couple of schools that you approve, all right? I think everybody in the city of Cincinnati knows the Cincinnati public schools that really stand out and are a magnet. So you're saying that we should ignore the change in bus service that apparently is going to be harder for kids to get to school now under the new sort of rules. They're going to have to go and they have to do a switch downtown at the main hub and then get to the bus that's going to take them to their school. It's got some parents angry, et cetera. And it's not better in terms of getting kids to school. But your point is, ignore all that. Why would you want to put your kid on one of those buses if they're going to end up at one of those schools?
Right.
I love it.
The point, like, why? And remember this, too. You know, to say public schools is funded by taxpayer money.
Yes.
By property tax. So taxpayer, if you're in the Cincinnati school district, that includes Amberley Village, Gulf Banner, some of these other suburbs that are in Cincinnati public schools, your tax dollars, they want to spend more of your tax money to send kids across town to a failing school when they got one down the street from them that's already failing.
That sounds like you got it all sized up there, Lawrence.
I'm just trying to figure it out. You know, I've heard some arguments from the teachers union saying, well, the kids get to pick the program that they want to go to. That's why they need the extra service. Well, hell, I'm looking at the public schools that are failing. I mean, which failing program do I want? Do I want the failing IT program at Taft? Do I want the failing STEM program at Hughes? I mean, which is it? I mean, to
Lawrence,
me, it's just,
Lawrence,
you know, it's crazy.
You have school choice. It's just the choice of which failing school you want to send your children to.
Right. And then it's crazy. And then taxpayer, we're going to try to, the teachers union, taxpayer, we're going to try to make you finance extra buses to schools to bus your kid from the east side to the west side and vice versa for a failing school.
Yep.
Like, just walk up the street and go to the failing school instead of catching the extra bus across town to a failing school if you're not going to a real magnet school.
I can't argue with your logic, Lawrence. I cannot argue with it.
What exempts them? What exempts the state public schools from getting a bus service that every other metropolitan city in the state of Ohio is getting, like Columbus, Dayton, Cleveland. These cities are doing the same busing program that Cincinnati, which is always last, is now implementing. And we got people complaining about busing kids to another fellow school and want taxpayers to pay for that. Like, just how about you approve the schools in every neighborhood so kids can walk to a passing school?
I could not argue with that logic. And I think the best way to improve public schools is by letting those tax dollars you're talking about, or whatever money is allocated per student, to go with the student so they could go to a performing school, one that actually teaches and educates. And then that way the public school that isn't doing that gets deprived of those dollars, and it either gets its act together and starts educating children, or, well, no one ends up going there and it closes. Lawrence, I appreciate your observations, man.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for the call. Stay well. 640 coming up on 755 KRC, the talk station, 749-55. KRC, the talk station. Jerry Thomas and the Monday Morning Spleen Vent. My dad coming up after the top of the hour news. In the meantime, I'm going to head back over to the phones. Got Jim on the line. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Hit #550 if you have an AT&T phone and would like to talk. Jim, thanks for calling this morning.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. I'm kind of old man here, but I just hear these stories about all these immigrants coming across the line down in Texas and Arizona.
Yep.
And they're putting them on buses and shipping around the country.
Yes, sir.
And I heard last night on radio that San Diego sent a whole bunch of them to Las Vegas, and now their infection rate is up 10%, plus their hospitals are all loaded. So I don't know who determines who puts these buses out and where they go, but why can't they ship a load to Pelosi's house? Why can't they ship a load to Brian's residence? Why can't they ship them, you know, to the various places for the people that are causing the problem?
Wonderful rhetorical questions, Jim, and I guess they don't end up in Pelosi's neighborhood because there's no room for them in a very wealthy enclave, gated presumably. And of course, the federal government is doing everything they can to prevent Texas from taking its own, using its own initiative and its own resources to prevent people from being released into the interior, particularly the interior of Texas. Obviously, we have a genuine on full display problem on our hands. Unchecked, unregulated immigration against the backdrop of you, Jim, being told you're not allowed to go into a restaurant unless you got a COVID-19 vaccine permit, mask up in indoor spaces with people, Jim. But migrants, these folks coming across the border, they don't check them. They don't check them for disease. They put them on a bus and send them into the interior of our country.
When they ask me if I want my registration, I'll say, what do you want, my right arm or my forehead?
There you are, Jim. There you are. Appreciate the call, which leads me to an opportunity to mention the Doctors Caucus. 13 Republicans in the House of Representatives now demanding the Department of Homeland Security give us data on COVID-19 infection rates among migrants. Letter expressing concern the Biden administration is considering revoking. Get a load of this. Title 42. A public health measure allowing Department of Homeland Security to rapidly expel migrants on public health grounds. Getting rid of the ability to repel migrants on public health grounds. The doctors and the Doctors Caucus, including Congressman Brad Wenstrup, he's a signatory on this, they describe the move as a drastic miscalculation that, in their medical opinion, would likely exacerbate the COVID-19 public health crisis. So here you have Democrats on one side screaming at you to vaccinate and social distance and mask. Even vaccinated people have to mask now, according to their recommendations. They have taken away employment from federal employees who refused to get the vaccine, in essence. And yet here we stand, staring at a Trump almost solved problem. The numbers, when Trump was president and his executive orders were in effect and they were enforcing the on-the-books immigration laws passed by Congress and signed into law by prior presidents, the numbers were very low. They saw a precipitous decline. People refused to go to the border when they knew the Trump administration and the ICE officials were going to do their damn job. In comes Biden. Whatever evil orange man did must be bad, so we're going to undo it and look what you got. Unchecked, unfettered, unbelievably, just huge amounts, thousands and hundreds of thousands. I saw the stat. I believe they're expecting way more than 1 million illegal immigrants coming into our country this year. Not one's being checked for COVID-19. Not one. And how can that possibly be? How can that possibly be? Well, therein perhaps lies the lie. I don't know. But one, you know, if you've got a bunch of distrust in government anyway, and as well you should, but you have on just the COVID side, the flip-flopping, the different rules, the obligations, what you should do, what you can, what you can't do, and they do not apply equally to those individuals flowing across our border merely because they're undocumented. So you, the documented legal resident of the United States of America, have far more obligations living in this country than an illegal immigrant living in this country has. It's scary. For those who wax poetic about the days when we essentially had open borders, all my ancestors came through at Ellis Island and brr, 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 brr. Yeah, you know what they checked you for at Ellis Island to see if you had any medical conditions that would make you basically a ward of the state. They sent back people that were sick, just presented with general illness. And, of course, medicine, modern medicine, with swabbing and research and development and science, and now we have antibiotics and all this kind of thing. You know, yeah, well, that didn't exist a long, long time ago. They just eyeballed them. And if you look sick, they sent you home, which is crueler. In either case, the law, this Title 42 law that allows expelling of migrants on public health grounds is in place to protect you, the American citizen. Now, how does the left respond to that? Oh, you xenophobe. Wow. You go ahead and try to reconcile the opposing positions. I think you will struggle mightily. 656 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. We'll see what Dad's got to say. Monday morning spleen vent after the news. I hope you can stick around.
Hear about it. Talk about it. 55 KRC, the talk station.
Trigger alert. Trigger alert. This is a 55 KRC trigger alert.
Coming up on 706 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Of course, regular listeners know exactly what that trigger alert's all about. It is that time of week, Monday at 7:05. We do the Monday morning spleen vent featuring my dad, Jerry Thomas, getting it out of his system. Dad, happy Monday. Did you have a good weekend?
I just have been marveling at listening you talk about our government. Do you know how stupid they sound with what you're talking about here this morning?
I know. And, you know, people are, you don't have to be a weed dweller, you know, like a political weed dweller like I am and you are, and people who just, you know, kind of eat, sleep, and breathe politics, of course, have to do it for a living. But This is something even, you know, the folks who are trying to avoid it can't help but pay attention to. You're like, what? Yeah, it's mind-boggling. It really is mind-boggling.
And then you try to get over onto the west side of town.
And it was never easy over there for people from the east side or anybody else out of the country. Driving around the west side was never an easy task. And now you've got Muddy Creek closed and Ebenezer for how long? Oh, my God. What a nightmare scenario that's got to be. Anyhow.
Is this one of the things that Biden is doing for us?
I don't know. Well, since it's a sewer line, probably, you know, I mean.
Okay, I'll go along with that, man.
Anyhow, so.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, since I caught you off guard yesterday with my question about the, what I have affectionately referred to as Biden's chin booger, that thing he ate off of it. Did you see the video of that?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
okay. I've been trying to check it out.
All right, I'll send you the link. Joe took a news hiatus over the weekend, and he came in this morning. And I said, Joe, can you pull the audio off from Caddyshack where they're talking about Spalding and betting on whether or not he would pick his nose and then making a follow-up bet on whether he'd eat it? And so what are you talking about? I said, you didn't see Joe Biden. So I proceeded to explain to him about how Biden was given a note pointing out that while he was on camera, he has something on his chin, which you read the note, then he grabs a hold of his chin where this little piece of what appeared to be egg is, and he looks at it. in his on his fingers, and then he sticks his fingers in his mouth and eats whatever it was. So that scene from Caddyshack seemed appropriate, but Joe had not seen it yet either. And as soon as I sent him the link, he was not happy that he watched it.
Yeah, he's a cool dude, isn't he?
Eye bleach central, man. Eye bleach.
Well, I got to talk to you about a little thing here. I don't know how the Democrats are going to get anybody to vote for their ideas. I want you to listen to the most recent idea that the Democrats have come up with. At least they're proposing this. I hope they don't go through with it. And anyhow, a new national climate army.
Oh, yeah.
A federal civil climate corps.
CCC.
Yeah, there you go. You're going on.
So that's what Grandpa used to work for, my late Grandpa Marsh. Got a job when he was 14 years old with the FDR CCC back then. See, they couldn't even come up with a new name. They had to have the same thing that FDR had, CCC.
The name of the project is Climate Corps. They're going to be spreading out across the country. These are young people now, young people that have been hired to lecture every citizen about the perils of climate change.
Yep.
Now, it isn't, I know that's just what you want. You know, $10 billion is paid for this now. Joe Biden's shock troops will be coming, knocking at our doors, and paid with our taxes. $15 an hour, as a matter of fact. And
shock.
They will be boring you to death with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's ideas, like stop eating meat,
yeah,
stop driving a car,
yeah,
or stop flying in airplanes. The Civilian Climate Corps will also, if you like this, and I don't even know if you have to like it or not, they'll regale you with environmental and race injustice.
Oh yeah, equity, Dad. Gotta have a conversation about equity.
Yep. Economics, yeah, equality is all there. $10 billion of our money will be transforming every aspect of your life at your front door. I'll bet you can't wait to have that happen at your house, knocking at your door and telling you everything you have to know about climate change.
Well, I know, Dad, because I grew up in your house. I know that if a youngster, and you know, here's what I imagine, Dad. This new CCC, the Civilian Climate Corps, is going to be made up of unemployed college graduates with social justice degrees that they can't find employment with, right? It's like if you want to get a degree in pick a different ethnicity, whatever ethnic studies you want to get a degree in, that's not going to pay you a wage when you get out of college. You're either going to continue in academia and perpetuate the cycle, or you're going to end up, I don't know, working at Starbucks or something. But now you've got an alternative. You have a social justice degree, which the Biden administration would love for you to have if you're going to be going door to door doing CCC
and you go
work.
Tell them about it.
And then you get to pay off your student debt with the $15 that we're paying you to do that. Now back to having grown up in your house, Dad. I anticipate this is the way the conversation or effort at conversation would unfold. CCC representative knocks on the Thomas household front door. Dad comes to the door to answer the door. They begin to regale him with, or try to regale him with, things about climate change, social justice, equity, etc. Dad has two words for them. It's not happy birthday, and the door is shut. Do I have this scenario down pretty accurately, Dad?
You got it.
Okay,
right on the nose.
Which leads me to ask you, much in the same way the vaccination door-to-door folks are basically having doors shut in their face, fine, I got the word, you can move away from my home now, I know about vaccines. Does anybody really think this is going to have any impact on a single human being?
I can't believe anybody would do this.
Well, I just mentioned all the unemployed college graduates that have worthless degrees. I mean, that's, you know, this is a job opportunity for them.
Yeah, I know. You tell your prospective new
The federal employees, we'll just call them that.
This is what I did my last job.
Oh, yeah, as a resume builder?
Right.
Yeah. After the program's over, this is what you've got on your resume. I went door to door telling people how to live their lives. Oh, well, we could hire you on right here.
That's crazy people.
That actually might work if they're applying at, say, Google or Facebook or one of the other social media companies, because clearly you've got folks in your corner of the sociopolitical spectrum just by virtue of the fact that they're willing to take a job telling people how to live their lives.
Yeah, these are the people running the country. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It is insane. Absolutely insane. But, you know, then again, the information coming out regarding vaccines, insane in and of itself. And the climate control stuff is crazy. I don't know if you heard me talking about that. You know, we're buying all these damn solar panels from China. China's manufacturing them using them coal plants.
I know.
They don't have to curb their appetite for coal or their belching out of pollutants one iota. And we feed the monkey, continuing to cause more pollution to be belched out into the world because we're buying all this stuff from them.
And we're buying it from our enemy.
Right. Well, not only our enemy, but think about it. The reason we might, why do you think we would buy solar panels from China? Well, that's because we don't make them here, and if we did, they'd be a hell of a lot more expensive because of all the rules, regulations, environmental and otherwise, that will be loaded upon any manufacturing company. So that would cost a solar panel, let's say a solar panel bought from the United States, it'd be $100. If we can get them for $20 from China, let's just do that. Okay. But in doing that, you are causing China, which has no pollution or regulatory rules, to belch out and pollute the environment. Well, that's okay. It makes me feel better. I got cheap solar panels, and we don't get to use carbon gas or coal or anything like that. Ah, crazy. Dad, I
don't have a Jack Daniels now.
I may need one during the break. We'll find out what else is on my dad's mind after this break. Yes, starting with... Station, yeah, that was the word he dropped off. Happy Monday to you. Money Monday coming up after the top of the hour news with Brian James. Got some cool topics to talk about with him, including some details from the infrastructure deal. 2,700 pages, and I guarantee as sure as I'm sitting here, Brian James did not read all of it, and I guarantee you not a single senator pushing for this thing's read it all. Either, but hurry up and pass it, they will. Economic prospects looking good, but Delta variant surged and things got different. Robinhood IPO falls flat. Those are the topics with him. In the meantime, my dad's on the phone with in the middle of the Monday morning spleen vent on to whatever else is under your skin. Dad, let's go.
Well, if you know Joe Biden's policy on immigrants this week, it's probably different than last week. And it's harder. It's hard to follow that. I say that it's like one of his basement speeches, Joe's speeches. You just can't follow it at all. Is there a policy for Cubans? Is it the same for Mexicans? And if you know, could you tell Kamala Harris, for that matter, tell Joe Biden too, because he probably doesn't know, honestly.
True.
Last week, the Cubans were trying to find out on their own. The Cuban-American demonstrated this past week on the front lawn of the Capitol in a Free Cuba demonstration featuring Republican lawmakers like Kevin McCarthy, a House Minority Leader, mm-hmm. and many others there. They were all speaking about Cuba's communist regime, their lack of freedoms. And that starts with everything, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom. I mean, anything and everything, they just don't have it. Every Cuban wants everything that we have every day.
Yep.
Signs were carried saying, SOS, Cuba. And Libertad, it's simply the same thing that you and I ask for every single day. They ask for it. It's fundamentals, you see. While we, Americans, are asking to have masks taken away from us. That sounds a little silly in comparison there. Now, is he going to fix it? Joe, is he going to fix this for us? Can he fix it?
Well, no.
Is he going to fix it? If he can... When can he do it? How can he do it? The Cubans are begging for help, and he's looking over there saying, gee, is that a turkey flying over there? What? Or let me get this stuff off my nose. I don't know what's going with the guy.
Well, you know, the thing is, Dad, and as you pointed out, it was Republicans who were with the Cuban protesters that are you know, just trying to get them to embrace the concept of freedom there, trying to get elected officials to assist those who are really want to be free in Cuba. This has been the argument ever since Castro took over. Whoops, we accidentally helped a communist take over Cuba. Batista sucked, but look what we got in return. That used to be non-political. So that Cuba was a communist run. I mean, does anybody remember the 13 days, JFK? Yeah. We almost were in nuclear war over Cuba and its communism and its relationship to the Soviet Union. I mean, those are frightening days. Would a Democrat even utter the words, I defend, you know, Fidel Castro? No, there would have been Republicans and Democrats, you know, standing on the front lawn of wherever the hell they happen to be protesting Cuban oppression. It wouldn't have been political. Now it is. You got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's wing of the Democratic Party, which has taken over more and more. They love Venezuela. They love Cuba. They think that they're awesome. Starvation, people not having anything. See, this is all part and parcel with the problem with America, Dad. We're too rich. We have too much money. We got too many things to buy. We're too fat. We've got it too easy. We need to make everybody miserable under an authoritarian, oppressive communist regime. How dare you criticize Cuba? Cuba's a success story. That's what they're having to say without having to say it out loud.
Well, some of the Cubans, if they get here, will be shocked when they say, you know what, this is just like Cuba.
Yeah, it's turning in that way. And you know, Dad, you can say that there are a lot of Cubans that were probably standing on the front of the lawn, and a lot of Cubans that have relocated and are in Florida, lots of them.
Absolutely.
That watched this happen. That understood, yeah, the Batista room sucked, but you know what we got in return? We got a lot of death, a lot of political executions, a lot of oppression, no freedom of speech, and we had to listen to Fidel Castro drone on for 4 and 5 hour speeches under threat of getting locked up if we didn't pay close attention to what that man was saying over and over again.
I can hardly wait for Joe Biden to start in that.
Oh, wow. Well, that would be high comedy, Dad. Can you imagine him trying to put together a coherent string of sentences without someone telling him what to say? Okay, at least Castro could pull that off. Dad,
hey, good.
Love you, man. Thanks for coming on every Monday. I really enjoy it anyway.
Love you too, man.
We'll talk later in the week, and of course, until next Monday.
You got it.
Tell Mom I love her too. 724, coming up at 725, 55 KRC, the Talk Station. Yeah, 729 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Happy Monday. It's happy Monday unless you normally rely on that Muddy Creek intersection at Ebenezer, in which case, probably not a happy Monday. Just, oh, man, my West Side friend's going to have to contend with that. I just keep thinking about how many days in a row I would use that road and go through up the hairpins, and I guess you can't do that now. So good luck. We get traffic reports all morning here at 55 KRC Talk Station. Remember, if you can't listen live, if you're just tuning in, you're like, gosh darn it, I just tuned in. I missed Jerry Thomas and the Monday Morning Explain That podcast, 55KRC.com. I encourage you to head on over there anytime you cannot listen live. And in fact, that Muddy Creek Road closure, Joe linked an article to that right there. My conversation with Jason Williams from Politics Extras there as well, and a whole bunch more. Oktoberfest Cincinnati information, too. We're doing that this year. Hopefully. Anyway, police identified a man who died in Lincoln Heights this on Sunday morning. Deputies dispatched to Jackson Street near Leggett Street, village of Lincoln Heights, for reports of multiple people injured or deceased. Deputies got there about 3:45 in the morning, found one man injured. The Woodlawn Fire Department responded and found a man dead, identified as Bruce Nixon, 53 years old. He died as a result of blunt force trauma. According to the sheriff's office, got Jamal Sherman Morris arrested around 10:45 on Sunday in the morning, named a suspect by the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office. Both victim and suspect reside in Lincoln Heights. Oh, gee. Over to Price Hill, got one dead, another injured after a shooting. Lower Price Hill, this happened Friday night. Officers dispatched to the 2100 block of Store Street about 10:15 in the evening, found Jerome Williams, 39 years old, dead at the scene. Police said another victim suffering from non-life-threatening injuries was there. Name of the second victim not being released at this time. No word on suspects. But you know what? If you got any information, of course, get in touch with the Cincinnati Police Department Homicide Unit. And I'm thinking Crime Stoppers, 352-3040. Don't have to give your name if you tip police and arrest. You'd be doing society a huge favor. And, of course, you'll be eligible for a cash reward. The logistics of this is more shocking than the actual story. If you're familiar with Oxford, you might know of a place called Brick Street. It's a bar, I guess, restaurant. Anyway, they posted on Instagram that you must have proof of vaccination, evidence of a negative COVID test, or evidence of a positive antibody test. And I did at least give them props for allowing people who have suffered through COVID the opportunity to come in since they have natural immunity, i.e. the positive antibody test. But I think this raises larger questions like who in the hell knows what an authorized, if there is one, form looks like. I have a friend of mine who had cards that this person used, and this person shall remain nameless and genderless, at least in terms of my explanation, in the medical profession and kind of an anti-vaxxer type person, but showed us the vaccine cards in blank. And you know what? There's really nothing like holograms or anything on it that would look like it was a certified official document. So I don't understand how you put somebody in the front of a bar. Remember the ID checker? I use this in the context of how easy it is to get a fake ID these days. You know, they'll manufacture them in China and send you one. You got an Illinois driver's license. Congratulations. But, you know, does every person checking IDs at a bar know what every other state's ID looks like? Probably not, right. So what's a COVID-19 positive or an antibody test really look like? Is one size fits all? Are they the same? I personally don't know. I've been talking about COVID-19 since, well, January of last year, if not before, and I don't know what one looks like. So I don't understand how the Brick Street is really going to be able to enforce its own self-imposed rule. But there you have it. Coming to a theater near you. I just got a text from my friend Beth, married to Swabby O'Brien. And she said she's got an uncle in the Philippines who said they are not allowed in grocery stores unless they have proof of vaccination in the Philippines. I think you might have a riot on the streets if we tried to put that in place here. I'll leave that up to the powers that be. And before I get to Mike, who's got a comment, hold on one second. Mike, Kentucky State Police identified the remains of a woman found in Lloyd's Wildlife Management Area, Crittenden. They got a call regarding human remains back on July 31st. The woman identified now as Autumn Patterson, 34 years old, of again, Kentucky. Police Department says foul play is not suspected. Kentucky State Police and the Dry Ridge Police Department are in charge of the investigation. Okay, let's go over the phones. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling this morning, and happy Monday to you.
Good morning. Did you get a chance to look at that book?
Beg your pardon?
Did you get a chance to look at that book I gave you?
Oh, Mike, no, not yet. Yeah. No, you okay. Trust me, and it's not insulting to you. I sure appreciate your thinking of me and handing along that book. You and a lot of other people have done that over the years. My obligation reading list is lengthy, my friend. It is very, very lengthy, but I promise you I will get along with it and can't thank you enough for passing it to me.
But my comment is, my concern lies in when you hear, like, McCarthy standing up for Cuba, and we're talking about China.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing about freedom. What the hell is wrong with the United States? They're allowing it to happen here.
Well,
they're allowing our freedoms to be eroded and destroyed and not a noise.
Yeah.
And then you have the go ahead.
Well, I would just say there is noise. I make it every day. I have tons of friends who make
government.
I know, but you see, therein lies the rub. And those who make noise, like, for example, I mentioned the Doctors' Caucus. There were 13 Republicans on the Doctors' Caucus who sent a letter demanding information on, for example, the migrants' COVID infections. Now, I know about this, but this is not something CNN is going to report on. It's not something the mainstream media is going to be interested in because why? It draws attention to a Charlie Foxtrot at the border and how mismanaged and perhaps intentionally show the open borders is and how duplicitous it is for them to ignore all the COVID that clearly is coming across our country through the southern border while screaming at us about having to wear masks and get vaccines. You can't justify it.
Other diseases over time. I mean,
everything.
I mean,
yeah.
I thought
everything.
Bed bugs was a joke until I realized. Then they came here from when they started crossing over. When I was a kid, it was that little thing. Don't let the bed bugs bite.
I know.
And, you know, and now you're talking about polio I can't think of the other name.
Oops. Got to hit the dump button on that one. You can't curse on the 55 KRC Morning Show, Mike. You know that. Appreciate the call. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on your AT&T phones. And Joe wants me to remind you, and I don't think that was an intentional one, but that kind of stuff will get you banned from the program. So there's passing along that from Joe, and that is a rule with which I agree. Over to Prestige Interiors. You know what? Prestige Interiors just did a fabulous job on my wife and my kitchen, our kitchen. And I know John and his crew are going to do the exact same for you. No other room gets as much attention as the kitchen. I know that's certainly the case in our home. And after John Ryan and Prestige Interiors did our kitchen, it's even more of a central focal point. Love it in the kitchen. Renovation, most important. Ensure it's done right, and that's at 7:41 right now, I-55 KRC, the talk station. Going to learn money matters coming up after top of the hour news. Brian James doing that Money Monday thing. Oh, in the 8 o'clock hour also, Jeremy Adams is an author. Has written a new book, Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. One can only imagine. And anyhow. Oh, back to the Doctors Caucus letter. I mentioned it in the last segment. I don't understand why this is going on, but the Doctors Caucus, at least 13 members of the Doctors Caucus, including our own Congressman Brad Wenstrup, had to write a letter to the Department of Homeland Security about the COVID-19 infection rates among migrants. And, you know, this sort of is a story that runs parallel with the whole problem and crisis at the border. You say what you want about evil orange man, but you can compare the numbers of people streaming across the border with the numbers that were streaming across the border during Trump administration. And Trump had done a pretty gosh darn good job of stemming the flow because, of course, he had negotiated with the various Central American countries and, of course, Mexico to keep people in place. You come here, you're looking for asylum, fine, go back to Mexico and wait for your hearing date. That was very effective because people realized they weren't going to be allowed into the interior of the United States, so the numbers drop off. Enter Joe Biden, everything evil orange man did bad, so we must get rid of it, i.e. open the borders back up. Now you got this huge influx of people. We've got coyotes who are spreading the word, making tons and tons of money for themselves and for the drug cartels just by bringing people up. At least they have something to market their skills with. Hi, I'm a coyote. I want to take you. I will be happy to take you to the United States border. It'll cost you fill in the blank, $5,000, whatever. Under the Trump administration, the response might have been, but why would I want to do that? They're not going to let me in. Business dries up. Simple. But so you've got the reversal of that, and you've got at the same time this infectious disease problem. And the last caller's right. You know, COVID-19 isn't the only thing that, well, folks are coming into our country with. And the point of the border, one of which is to protect the citizenry, the United States citizens. Yes, to the exclusion of others who might want to come in, particularly if those folks are, well, deadly plague dangerous. I mean, seriously, would anyone have a problem stopping someone at the border if they were infected with Ebola? That's what Title 42 is all about. And so these doctors had to write to the Biden administration, who is considering revoking Title 42, which allows the Department of Homeland Security to rapidly kick immigrants out on public health grounds. Now, if you hear the Biden administration over talking about COVID on one side, oh, my God, you'd think it is the end of the blanking world. Delta variants, it's as dangerous as there spreads like chicken pox, and you've got to look at the hospitals and blah, 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 blah. Right. Okay. Why don't you express the same or at least a measure of concern with the open borders you got with a bunch of people who you know are infected coming in the country and infected with Lord knows what? So the doctors are just like, you know, hey, Department of Homeland Security, we'd like to have some questions answered, please. Expressing concern at the Biden administration, of course, wanting to revoke the very health measure that allows them to kick people out on health grounds, calling it a drastic miscalculation that, in the doctor's medical opinion, would exacerbate the COVID-19 public health crisis, not to mention potentially create another health crisis. And it's reported the Customs and Border Control encountered more than 1 million illegal immigrants along the U.S. southern border in this calendar year alone. Folks, it's just now August. 1 million encounters, which of course means how many people weren't encountered? How many people were able to move around the greatly reduced Customs and Border Control folks and get into the country and be one of the unaccounted for? Month of June, they recorded 188,829 illegal immigrant encounters. It's pointed out in the Fox News reporting the week between July 19th and 25th, the Border Patrol detained 20,000 illegal immigrants in Texas Rio Grande Valley alone. One week period. You don't think we've got a problem on our hands? And the Biden administration's silence is deafening. You could be the open borders person, but are you the, oh my God, we're all going to die, COVID-19 concerned person as well? Go ahead. How do you reconcile those? They're not even swabbing them. 746, 55 KRC, the talk station. Oh, and parenthetically, the Biden Department of Justice is trying to stop Texas from securing its own borders and protecting its own people. We'll talk about that coming up for your phone call, 749-5500, 800-823 Talk. I want to mention Foreign Exchange, though. They do great work. I'm so pleased to recommend Foreign Exchange to you for your imported car repairs. They will fix your car as good, if not better. I mean, there's sort of a is it fixed or isn't it reality. You get a full warranty on both parts and service, so that is going to be, let's call that an all things equal element. What isn't going to be the same as the dealership is the price Foreign Exchange charges you to repair your car. You get an ASC certified master technician. That person will have data access to all. It's 7:51 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station, Money Monday coming up at the top of the hour news. Tomorrow, something to look forward to, Congressman Steve Shabbat and from Fox News, Jesse Waters. Thanks, Joe, for lining that up and for what you do every day. Executive producer Joe Strecker. Continuing on, just update on this whole border crackdown. You may have been aware that Texas Governor Greg Abbott has tried to stop on his own, using his own police, his own resources, and then calling in help from other states. Please send your extra cops, anybody you've got to help us with the border situation, because the Biden administration is not doing anything. And so that's what they did. He recently issued a policy, I guess by executive order, allowing state troopers, that'd be Texas state employees, to stop and turn back vehicles carrying illegal immigrants away from the boundary region. Now the Federal Justice Department has filed a lawsuit trying to block Governor Abbott from doing that. Think about it. Just remember, there are laws on the books what makes entry into our country illegal if you do it the way it's going on now. You have to go through proper channels. You got to claim asylum. You have to prove it. All on and on and on and on. That is interfering with the open borders reality that the Democrats want. They're trying to flood our country with a bunch of people that they presume will end up being Democrat voters, probably because they'll be hooked up to the umbilical cord of government. And without any job training or skills, these individuals then will be wards of the state, in essence. In essence, your employees on your hard work and your labor and your tax dollars. Attorney General Merrick Garland arguing that this interferes with the federal government's right to catch and release illegal immigrants, claiming that this whole thing's unenforceable against federal agencies and contractors anyway. True, but Texas does have laws on its own books. And if you're a trespasser, If you trespass in someone's private property, you could be arrested, you could be evicted or removed. One may argue this is exactly what's happening. We have a bunch of trespassers coming in. Anyway, Justice Department seeking a temporary restraining order, seeking to immediately halt this policy, which I must point out, Governor Abbott said is designed to stop, of course, the spread of COVID-19 in his state. Because what's happening? Folks that are untested, potentially ill after traveling thousands of miles in tight closed quarters, perhaps even backed into a shipping container or the back of a semi or stuffed into the trunk of somebody's car with four or five other people breathing each other's, vaporized particulate, getting COVID. They're allowed in. That obviously creates a problem for Texas, doesn't it? Texas will see a surge in COVID cases, and you, the unvaccinated resident, unvaccinated citizen of the United States of America are going to have a finger pointed at you and the blame cast on you for being unvaccinated. Well, what do you expect? We got the Delta variant floating around, and as we learned from the CDC last week, it's as contagious as measles. Put your damn mask on if you're indoors with a bunch of people and make sure you get vaccinated. And if you're not, we are going to shun you as a society. But what about those people coming in over the border? Well, we must leave them alone, because if we don't, then that would be cruel and unusual. And remember where your parents and great-great-great-grandparents came from, and they didn't have to get a COVID test or anything like that. You can't talk out of both sides of your mouth on this one, folks. And that's what they're endeavoring to do. Our own Justice Department will not enforce the laws that are on the books. Our own Department of Homeland Security has been instructed to not enforce the laws on the books. The Biden administration has instructed everybody that he's even connected with the border to basically stand down. You, ICE official, you're not going to be working in an internment camp where all these fresh, new, illegal immigrants are being placed in tight, closed quarters. Yeah, you remember the prisons that they claimed Trump had created? Right. Detention facility? Yeah, it's like that, except it's 10 times worse now. Because we're allowing 10 times, 20 times, 30 times the amount of illegal immigrants to flow over the border. So you guys over here, you're not going to be doing this whole the capturing and deporting of illegal immigrants. We're now going to put you in charge of babysitting. Texas Governor Greg Abbott steps up to the plate and says, hey, I've got resources. I'll fill in the gap. And our own Justice Department won't allow it. They don't have the resources to protect the border. They say too many people in these camps. That's why we've got to reroute people. The border becomes then more open. Now, if you've got a resource to fill that gap, to close that, well, sieve, wouldn't you go ahead and embrace it? If you're the federal government, you say, hey, thank you, Texas, for the help, man. We clearly didn't have the resources to stop this ourselves. I mean, they couldn't say that really either, because, of course, if Biden hadn't undone what Donald Trump did by way of executive order, we wouldn't have the problem on our hands anyway. 7:56 right now, Money Monday coming up after the news. I hope you can stick around.
I've been up to my eyeballs.
Sean Hannity.
Get as much information. You know, we've got a lot of cleaning up to do here.
Today at 3:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
8:05, the 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Monday. Beautiful day out there. Weather-wise, perfection. So if you're in the Monday blues kind of category of things, then at least you got some great weather to deal with. And you can change your attitude. I had a caller this morning said, he goes, I'm just going to decide to feel like it's Friday, even though it's Monday. And without further ado, because it is Monday, we do Money Monday with Allworth Financial's Brian James chiming in and giving us the details. Brian, welcome back, man. I hope you had a great weekend.
I did indeed, and we sure do have great weather out there, and I hope you got to enjoy some, too. This is the weirdest summer we've had in a while.
Isn't it
hot and disgusting, but it's not.
Yeah, I know, but right now, because August, as you everybody who lives in Cincinnati knows, is usually the 90-degree, like 100% humidity month. We had that already. It's like, so maybe this month is we get our June weather back, which was just, if I recall, a torrential downpour. Anyhow, on to matters of money. The infrastructure bill is out. I guess it's almost a rhetorical question, but Brian James, do you think anyone, any elected official, is capable of getting through what is 2,700 pages in advance of their scheduled summer break coming up?
Yeah, so you and I were out enjoying the weather, and lots of people around here were too, but you know who wasn't was Congress. We're actually working this weekend and produced a 2,702-page bill for us to pick through. So you and I have, what, half hour here this morning or so, so let's go ahead and get started with page one. So lots of money flying around here. What's in this? To me, honestly, Brian, what's most remarkable about this is this appears to be – it's going to survive as a bipartisan deal. So they were going to need, I believe it was about 10 Republicans to come over to the other side, and that appears to be happening. So what's going on in here? There's $110 billion. That's billion with a B. Remember, millions is so 20 years ago. We all talk about billions and trillions. Right. $110 billion for roads and bridges, including the one we all know and love, Brent Spence. Although I should say that hasn't been specifically called out in the bill.
Of course,
President Biden said it. Trump and Obama all highlighted the Brent Spence bridge. So we'll see if it actually happens. But $110 billion, $40 billion targeted for bridges, $39 billion for public transit, $66 billion for passenger freight rail, and then on down the line. There's plenty of other line items, but those are the big ones. Really has to do with transit and bridges. So those are the big things that we are looking to support. Now, where is that money going to come from? Well, at this point, they're looking at tapping about $205 billion that came out of the COVID of unspent COVID-19 relief aid. So,
which means to me, if I may interject, Brian, that just means that COVID-19 bill was at least $205 billion too big.
Arguably, yes. And if I read, we're not done with COVID-19 either. So we'll see what needs to happen there. So, so far, yeah, we've spent on that topic. We've spent about $4.7 trillion, again, trillion with a T, related to the pandemic. So there obviously is a little money left there. Be nice if we could say, you know what, we'll just save it. But then again, the bridges can't fall in the rivers either. Similar situation in unemployment aid that hasn't happened yet since some of those states declined to continue that in June, including Ohio. So there's money left over there. So $49 billion that's coming from a Medicare rule that was not yet in place. It was budgeted to cover these dollars, but the rule is not in place. So it's going to be pulled out of that. So who knows what that means downstream? Does that mean we're going to have to borrow again to support some new Medicare rules and things like that? Who knows? As well as auctions for 5G services. So in other words, all those different things that I mentioned really have nothing to do directly with infrastructure spending. They're all spending we were going to do anyway. And we're pulling from sources that hopefully would have supported the economy, maybe reduced the deficit, but we're choosing to kind of pre-spend that on this infrastructure bill.
Well, that's
so we have a ways to go in terms of responsible decision making, I would say.
Okay, I was kind of the direction I was going to go because it doesn't seem like any responsible economist could swallow the way this thing is being put together. And honestly, I mean, regardless of how they're paying for it, and I think that they are even paying for it is a laughable situation given our deficit. So, but $66 billion for passenger and freight rail. I just want to focus on the passenger part, Amtrak. And it's apparently a lot of this money is going to be used to reduce Amtrak's maintenance backlog, which means they haven't been taking care of their own things with the money that they get every year. Amtrak has always been a losing proposition as long as I've been around. I mean, does anybody even still rely on Amtrak, or is this, well, we're going to, using their word, we're going to invest $66 billion to make it so great that everybody's going to then start using it. Seems to me that it's going to have to go between places you want to be before anybody's going to get on the choo-choo train.
Right. And as you might guess, and those within the sound of our voices aren't going to like to hear this, but a lot of that's happening on the East Coast. Amtrak is pretty popular running between places such as New York City and Boston. And so obviously there's a whole lot of maintenance to be had out there. Our little route that runs through, and maybe people don't know this, but we do have a little route that runs through Union Terminal. You can catch it about 1 a.m. and it runs from New York City all the way to Chicago. So if you want to go to Chicago and take 9 hours to get there, as opposed to the 6 that you could drive, then, nice. You know, that's a pretty cool, the opportunity. But I don't think they're talking a whole lot about the 5 people that catch the Chicago train here in Cincinnati.
No, that's funny. They do have a ticket office over in Union Terminal, too. Last time I was there after the renovation and I saw it, I kind of laughed because, as you point, it wasn't open.
we took the family. It literally runs about 1:30, maybe it's 3 a.m, something ridiculous. You get to be in the museum in the middle of the night, so that's
wild. Well, my one experience with Amtrak, when I was living in Chicago, my dad, who was a season ticket holder with the Cincinnati Bengals since it was at Nippert Stadium, and of course after the ticket fiasco when the new stadium was built, he basically, he was part of the litigation that got his money back. anyway, because he got Super Bowl tickets every single year. He would go to all of them. One was in Minneapolis. He's like, there's no way in hell I'm going to freeze my butt off in Minneapolis for a stupid football game. Do you want the tickets? Like, sure. So me and there was five lawyers from my firm and me got on the train to Minneapolis rather than drive. The train departed. It was only 4.5 hours late getting out of the station, Brian. So that was my initial experience. And then there was no train to come back on. It was like one of those unknown things. We went into the station, said, well, the train's supposed to be here. Well, it's behind schedule. When is it supposed to come in? Well, at this point, we have no idea. That's what the answer was.
Right.
So we drove, or we, well, got a cab and went over to the, yeah, auto rental place and drove our butts back from Minneapolis to Chicago. So not a positive
experience.
Brian,
your ship has come in. Congress is riding 60, to the rescue to fix what happened to you 40 years ago.
With $66 billion. I see they're also, well, I guess the other component of this is the freight component, which is still viable as a mechanism for shipping, right? I mean, there's money to be made in shipping freight on rail, correct?
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's what we're all about these days. You know, how many Amazon trucks run through your neighborhood? Well, that stuff has to move across the country, you know, regularly. That is the society that we live in now. So that is very much a huge part of running the economy, getting stuff moved across the country. Even going back over decades when we started to ship jobs overseas and manufacturing overseas and all that, you're never going to change the fact that those products have to get through the last mile. So there's always going to be a need for rail and for substantial infrastructure to move goods across the country. So these aren't all bad things. We can't look at it and say this is bad money. We shouldn't ever spend it. Well, you can't build a bunch of metal stuff and let it sit outside, bridges and railroads and all that. It has to be maintained. Right. The part that's a little frustrating is we will not get to rely on this stuff. It's not going to create things that weren't there before for the most part. In other words, when we first opened railroads 160 years ago, well, and all of a sudden you had a way to get stuff to play to new markets. So this isn't that. This is maintenance. So we can't expect the bounce that we've gotten in the past.
No, and I understand that completely. But, you know, it serves to illustrate this is a $1 trillion bill. And with these billions floating all over the place, as you kind of alluded to earlier, it gives us an indication of, well, our elected officials have allowed these roads and bridges and infrastructure to deteriorate to the point where it's now an emergency because over that course of time, they were busy digging ourselves a deficit hole so they can continue to give us new stuff and things without taking care of the stuff that we had before.
Yeah. And we're doing the same thing with Social Security, right? We're not fixing Social Security. It's rusting away. But the problem, the root problem of all this, Brian, is we keep electing people that promise to give us free money. And make no mistake, both sides do it. But at the end of the day, nobody wants to have a hardcore, real conversation about how we cannot continue to do this endlessly. We can do it for a good long while. You know, it's going to be a long time before another country comes along that is stable enough to replace us in the economic order at the top of the pile. But we are going to continue to take advantage of that position that we have. And it all comes from the fact that we simply aren't willing to have a hard conversation with ourselves.
Well, Allworth Financial, Brian James, hang on because I see past tense. The U.S. economy's prospects looked past tense, bright. That is until. We'll get the until and the details from Brian James after I mentioned CME. CME Pipeline, the only company to call in terms of sewer problems, repair. That's all CME does, and it's all it's ever done, is fix sewer lines. And the coolest thing about CME is the benefit that you get for not having your business shut down for God knows how long and not ruining the landscaping or tearing down old growth trees or in the case of your factory. Yeah, this is for coming up at 8:20, a 55 KRCD talk station. Coming up at 8:40, Hollowed Out by Jeremy Adams. Hollowed Out, a warning about America's next generation. Frightening figures and reality we've got going on in the world right now. In the meantime, talking money with Allworth's Brian James. I'm sure you tune into them after the Hannity program Monday through Friday. Now, everything was looking great. The economy was going rosy. I guess we had more jobs out. I mean, tons more jobs than people were even willing to go apply for. I guess maybe that's in large part to the fact that we were paying people to stay home. I'll let you comment on that, Brian. But then along came, oh my God, the Delta variant, and what happened?
Remember when Delta was just an expensive airline here?
Yes.
Close by, because we simply had a, you know, we had a hub here that was nice. But anyway, that is not what Delta means these days. So what we're seeing now is some of the original economic projections talking about this year, in the quote unquote post pandemic year, we're looking for 8 to 8.5% growth. Those estimates, Cam, I remember that going back at least as far as 6 months. You know, that was some of the first things you and I talked about a while mm-hmm. back. But so now we're coming out and we're saying that we're probably looking at only about 6 to 6.5%. So on one hand, is that negative? Yes, less than we thought. But at the time, we also thought that the pandemic was going to be over with and there wasn't going to be a variant. But now there are multiple variants. We know we're not done yet. I got to admit, Brian, that headline that you read there, it's a little bit alarmist, because I will still take 6.5% coming out of the all too brief recession that we had. It's still positive. So let's not get too worked up over these things.
Oh, I agree completely. I mean, if we had, can you imagine sustained 6.5% growth? I mean, that's unheard of.
Oh, that was like internet times, you know?
Yeah,
back when
exactly.
There was really nothing
right.
Bad and scary
and then what happened? It blew up, right?
Exactly.
I keep waiting for
as it always does.
Yeah, I know. I keep waiting for this cryptocurrency crap to just completely tank once people realize that it is the biggest Ponzi scheme the world has ever known. Gosh almighty. Anyway,
you are not wrong.
I know. I don't understand how people put their faith in, you know, a bunch of digital nonsense that doesn't exist really in the real world. But beyond that, okay, where are we headed, though? Now, I know the moratorium on collecting rents is over. That's going to be an issue for some folks. I know there's a whole lot of jobs out there that may force the folks that are going to now have to pay the rent to go to work. So what do you see in your tea leaf reading how – where we're going to go here, which direction it's going. The vaccine's out there. I mean, these lockdown and mask mandates, I think, are just secondary to the broader problem of getting people to go to work.
Right. Yeah. And what we see is not nearly as alarming, again, as the headlines. So, yes, we've got issues. There are always issues, though, Brian. Pick your favorite time in the market, in the economy, and go Google headlines from that time period. There is always something hiding around the corner that's going to derail the train. But generally speaking, things go up, not down. So the things that we're seeing, and the encouraging part of the GDP report is that we are not seeing declines in personal spending, which that represents about 70% of the U.S. economy. So people are still getting out there and spending money. If we start to see that pullback, that's usually a pretty strong indicator that if the numbers are big enough, that we are headed toward a recession. So we don't appear to be going there. The other thing to remember is that if this does blow up, the Delta variant becomes a bigger deal, and maybe we have a double dip into this thing, at the very, very least, and this is cold comfort, but at the very least, we've seen it before, right? This time, if we go through another lockdown or another whatever we have to go through, and by the way, the data doesn't show we're anywhere near that, and
right.
Neither do our leadership talk about that. But if it got there, this time we wouldn't be talking about the last pandemic being 120 years ago. It would be a year ago. So it won't be as much of a surprise this time around.
Yeah.
So we are seeing green shoots here. Of course, things are going well. So S&P 500 companies are reporting earnings. We're in the middle of earnings season. About 88% of these companies have beaten their earnings estimates.
Wow.
So these are good things. Yeah, there are good things behind the scary headlines.
Yeah. Well, and like you say, if it were to result in what we went through last year, we did go through it last year. We know exactly what we're going to be dealing without. We're going to be dealing without restaurants. We're going to be having to, you know, mess around with masks. And we've already been working at home, so we'll probably continue to do that, right?
Some of us are doing it right now.
And Brian, that will make it easier for certified financial planners and others to make prudent investment decisions. Having lived through it, we know about, you know, key core consumer goods, and that's kind of where I wanted to go before we ended this segment. People have the money, clearly. They want to buy, but I read two articles this morning about lack of product. For example, school supplies are going to be in short supply. Joe Strecker experienced this over the weekend. The back-to-school sales haven't even started yet, really, but the shelves are kind of decimated. That's because of supply chain problems. So what is it? I mean, we're going to have to get the grease back into the supply chain to get the goods that we are demanding actually in a position where we can buy them. If that doesn't change, then people are going to be sitting on a bunch of money they can't even spend.
Yeah, and that's true. But these are the things that are moving forward. They're where we've got people going back to work. So, you know, Ohio and about 26 other states did end those unemployment, the extra unemployment benefits back in June. So if you live in the, some of those states, then you're now more motivated to go on back to work. What that means is that there's more people going into factories, going back to create the things that we then need to move across the country. So it's this is nothing more than supply chain disruption, which simply means we can't get it from point A to point B on the shelves at Joe's local Target. So, you know, these are things that will let up in this. And that's all we're really seeing right now in terms of the inflation and the scary things that are causing bumps in the night. We're really seeing things that we believe are temporary. If we get more serious, if there are further, you know, things that go beyond where you can point to the pandemic as being disruptive, if it's something else more structural, well, then that's going to change the environment drastically. But right now, we just haven't seen any of that. It's all stuff that you can point to. People couldn't go to work over the past 18 months. Therefore, stuff doesn't get moved to its rightful place on a store shelf.
Fair enough, Brian. Don't go away because an IPO, Robinhood IPO, independent public offering, apparently didn't do so well. We'll learn about what they do and why things went the direction they went. One more segment with Brian James for Money Monday. First, a word for Bond Furniture and Design in my beautiful downtown Loveland, where they've been for way north of 80 years. It's a staple in the community, and of course, I love my little historic downtown Loveland, so suggest quite often, you know, if you make a trip of it. There's plenty of restaurants down there. You got the bike trails. You can either bike or take a nice walk, stroll. It's a gorgeous day. And then, of course, stroll through the gorgeous Bond Furniture showroom. Won't have any problem parking there. And meet the interior designers, because it is Bond Furniture and Design, to suggest up front that the folks you're going to be working with do have interior design experience. And they'll be happy to lend it to you in any way you want. Come to your place, check out your design and your style, and kind of figure out something that way. Or, you know, photographs, you can bring them in with you. You can design a piece of custom-made furniture there. They have a couple of lines that they are affordable. Nonetheless, you get to determine how it's going to ultimately look, from fabric to cushions and arms and legs and things like that. Bond Furniture and Design in downtown Loveland. Where do you find them online? Just go to bondfurniture.com. Here's the number, 683-2233, 513-683-2233. Hey, 831, 55 Care CD Talk Station. It's Money Monday, talking with Brian James. And you have to do a little explaining up front. Robinhood had an IPO, and I know you're going to give us the details on where that one went. But first off, what is Robinhood, and should I have known before our conversation about Robinhood?
Well, it's been tough to miss because it's been in the headlines an awful lot lately. But if you don't know about it, that probably means you're not using it. So what Robinhood is, and by the way, I'm not telling you to rush out and use it either. What Robinhood is, it's a way to trade stocks, ETFs, mutual funds, and cryptocurrency virtually free for the end user.
Virtually free. I like the word virtually in front of that. Virtually free to the end user. I've had more conversations with Dave Hatter than I care to even remember about that concept, but no, never heard of it, never would use it, because I'm not trading in cryptocurrencies and I don't personally trade. I have people that do that for me. They're called certified financial planners who know what they're doing, because I am a novice. So there's that.
Hey, I've heard of those guys.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
So Robinhood, again, is just a way to get access to the capital markets. That concept is not new. You've been doing it on Fidelity and Schwab and wherever for years.
Sure.
What they've tapped into is just they've tapped into buzz. They created an app that is easy to use. This is, of course, mobile centric. I don't believe there even is a website that you can use to place these trades. So it is very easy to use. It is very simplified, though. For example, you can only use taxable accounts. You cannot use an IRA. You cannot use Roth IRAs or anything like that. Which, in on one hand, okay, if you're one of those folks who was using it to jump in and out of GameStop, and you were one of the tiny percentage who actually have made a profit on that, then you had to do it in a taxable account. And if you flipped it within 12 months, within 365 days, it was a short-term gain, which is taxable as income.
Right.
So little things like that make it kind of, you know, a little bit questionable. So anyway, where it came from, it's got the sort of the panache of being this, us against the world kind of a place to be. It was created in April of 2013 by a couple guys who prior to that were building high frequency trading platforms for big financial institutions in New York City. So this is not two plucky people who just came up with something to poke the man in the eye. They were already billionaires before they came up with this idea. So what they've tapped into is that there's a lot of people out there who have the desire to trade things and hopefully hit the lottery overnight. But as we all know, that's really not how life works.
No, it's not. But the idea that it's crypto, you mentioned the taxable account that it has to be relating to. Is it not possible to have an app out there that allows you to trade and make profit and gains in crypto without anybody knowing about it?
Yeah. Eventually, the IRS is going to find out that. So that's one of the things that actually one of the unique things about Robinhood is that if you're going to trade crypto there, you're actually trading in U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
So you don't ever actually have possession of Bitcoin or the Ether or the one we weren't allowed to say the name a few weeks ago. You don't own that. You own a sort of a tracking device that is priced in U.S. dollars, and it's going to spit out a 1099. So the IRS is going to know that you bought XYZ for $10 and you sold it for $20. Therefore, there's a gain. And that's where another crackdown is coming. The IRS and the SEC are starting to pay more attention to cryptocurrency trades there.
Plus, and you know, the other component of this, and I trust me, I am painfully aware of the dollar fluctuation and its value today versus what it was valued at, say, 20 years ago. But with crypto and its volatility, I just don't understand how you can use it as a currency. I mean, if I buy a candy bar that just use an imaginary, you know, the Thomas cryptocurrency, which is trading at a dollar today, and I buy a candy bar for a dollar, you get one Thomas Bitcoin or whatever. And then tomorrow, because I talk about it on the radio or because Elon Musk takes notice of it, that dollar is now the share is worth, you know, $20 overnight. There's no connection to reality. It's just that it's become the focus of media attention, and therefore people are inclined, like GameStop, to buy it for no other reason other than they hope they're going to hit the lottery. That candy bar does not cost $20. It's still a dollar. And yet, how does one trade in crypto? I mean, the volatility could change while you're doing the transaction, for God's sake.
Yeah, what you're talking about, these are speculative assets.
Yes,
that's why
they
are. People
are
making so much money. I mean, you're only hearing about the people who make tons of money. You are not hearing about the people who dabbled in it and got their heads handed to them and have now backed off.
It's like all the losers in Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody interviews them on the way out of the casino.
I know. They built that town. Look at it shine. Look at the opulence. Yeah, that's the losers that did it. Oh, Brian.
Yeah, you want to go to Vegas and look at the people who are getting on the planes out of Vegas. See, check out the looks on their faces.
Yeah,
same thing's happening in the cryptocurrency market.
Disheveled, they haven't slept for 4 days, and they look broke. Anyhow, because they are. Brian James, appreciate you coming on the program on Mondays to talk of these important matters. I'll look forward to next Monday for another edition of Money Monday. And, of course, we'll be listening to you at 55KRC, the talk station, this evening after Hannity.
You have a good week. We'll talk soon.
836 right now, 55KRC, the talk. It is 8:40 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. Everyone, a very happy Monday. It is gorgeous out there. And I'm pleased to welcome to the 55KRC Morning Show, Jeremy S. Adams, author of the book Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. By way of background, he's a high school and college political science teacher from Bakersfield, California, lifelong educator. He's the winner of numerous awards and honors and as a classroom teacher, including the 2014 California Teacher of the Year Award from, of all places, the Daughters of the American Revolution. My mom's a member. Finalist in 2013 for the prestigious Carlston Family Foundation National Teacher of the Year Award, and 2013 semifinalist of the California Department of Education's California Teacher of the Year Award, and is the first classroom teacher ever inducted into California State University Bakersfield Hall of Fame. Author of numerous books on teaching, education, and his opinion pieces have been featured in a whole host of national news outlets. Welcome to the program, author of Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation, Jeremy Adams. Good to have you on the show today.
Good morning. I'm very jealous of your weather forecast. I heard it was sunny and 78. It's going to be 106 here, my friend.
Oh, my word. Obviously, you were calling from the West Coast.
Yes. And I'm not the cool surfing on the beach, California. I'm the Central Valley. We're, you know, running out of water, 106 California.
Wow.
Thank you so much. thank you so much for having me on your show this morning. It's great to be with you.
I am pleased to. And, okay, I'm looking at your awards here. Teacher of the Year, California School Systems. Teacher of the Year Award, teacher this, recognized. And so clearly you must be a big fan of critical race theory and eradication of AP classes and things like that. Jeremy?
Oh, I'm an absolute huge fan of any philosophy that is going to be on the other side of the Declaration of Independence, the Gettysburg Address, the 14th Amendment, Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream." Of course, I'm being sarcastic.
Of course,
I think you can probably tell I am a classroom romantic. I teach kids from all walks of life, and I thoroughly believe that the one certain door to the American dream is a high quality education.
Amen.
But at the end of the day, the reason why I wrote Hollowed Out is because, I've been teaching now, Brian, for this is my 23rd year, which is crazy to me. And I will tell you, in the last just 5 to 10 years, there have been pivots and changes in the way that students behave, their values, the way that they spend their time. And it's profoundly upsetting. And I'll tell you that typically when somebody writes an ambitious book that says, hey, there is a colossal, titanic problem in the nation that nobody's paying attention to, and it's coming at us. Typically those books are written by famous people, right? Politicians, pundits, Instagram influencers, people who have a million followers. And I'm here to tell you right now, if you want to know the real crisis coming towards America, we're seeing it in the classroom.
Yes.
And the people in the trenches. We want to wave our hands and yell out, America, pay attention to what's happening here. Because the way that students are behaving and the values and the mental health and all the things I'd love to talk to you about today, it's hollowing them out. And we need to pay attention to that.
Okay. And I hear everything you're saying and embrace it. And I've had conversations with professors. I loved college and I went to law school and I loved law school. The Socratic method was still in place. You could have Q&A back and forth. They would press you on the boundaries of your knowledge, walk through scenarios. It was exciting. It was fun. Like talking about philosophy, you really could have a great time engaging with a professor. And I always thought that was the compelling thing about wanting to be a professor. And I ran into one, a teacher at Xavier University. And I asked him about it. He was a philosophy teacher. And I said, oh my God, that's got to be a great time, interacting with the students. And this was a couple of years ago. He looked at me and gave me this stern look and just shook his head back and forth. He said, not anymore. And of course, where I'm going with that, Jeremy.
I was going to say, Brian, that's the gospel. The Socratic method doesn't work with young people anymore.
I know.
It doesn't. And I was brought up in that. I'm a big fan of the liberal arts. My wife went to law school. You're the only person I've ever known who said they liked law school.
I met my wife there.
Oh, okay.
And it fed my family quite well for 16 years until I took this job. So,
yeah, fair enough. But your broader point is absolutely right on. And the point that I want to make, the reason why I want everybody to read Hollowed Out, and I don't care what your profession is, I don't care what your politics is, this is an American crisis, because what people who are not in the classroom don't realize today is the extent to which young Americans are being brought up in their lives untethered to adult responsibilities, adult values, and how there is an absence of adult role models. Before the pandemic, Brian, before the pandemic, they were spending 9 or 10 hours a day on their devices. And that means that a lot of the good stuff of our childhood that you and I don't know how old you are.
55.
Okay, I'm 45. The things that kind of made our childhood great, they're not doing. They're not dating. They're not going to the movies. They're not reading books. They're not going to football games. Their knowledge of traditional things like religion, and I don't care what religion it is,
right,
they don't know much about it. And you look at their mental health. I mean, anybody who thinks I'm slamming the kids is wrong. I'm not being a crank. I'm slamming us, the adults. We've allowed children to grow up like this, and they are miserable, Brian, absolutely miserable.
They are. You mentioned statistics, that are the and everybody knows about this who's been paying any attention whatsoever, the increase in amount of depression among children, the amount of suicides that have gone up.
Yeah.
And I have got to point to, and I think this is one of the answers, is your comment then about screen time. They're getting the messages that they are absorbing via the internet. And clearly we know there's been story after story after story how we are being manipulated and deprived certain types of information day in and day out. These children are getting a constant stream of the same crap.
Yeah, this algorithmically redundant produced crap that you're talking about. I mean, think about it. Think about all the meaningful attachments that give our lives meaning. Family, faith, friendship, community, a love of your nation, reading. All of these things, this kind of connective tissue that when you're young, you learn to connect yourselves to things that are bigger than yourself, things that introduce you to things like love or loyalty or sacrifice. None of these things are in prominent, you know, are in abundant supply on social media. And that's why they're being hollowed out. I mean, if you look at some of these other statistics, consider this. Half of all 18 to 34-year-olds don't have a romantic partner. The desire for marriage and family is in free fall. One out of five millennials say they don't have a great friend in the entire world. These young people, they don't have a family dinner. Like I mentioned the term family dinner to my class a few years ago, you know, where mom and dad sit down and you have a meal at dinner time.
Yep.
They looked at me like I was crazy. Brian, they had no idea what I was talking about. They are not around adults, and therefore they are not absorbing the aspirations and the dreams and the wisdom that adulthood provides to young people, and it is hollowing them out. And again, I can't be more passionate about this, that this is something that, you know, it's always below the surface. And a lot of us teachers out there, I'm a proud public school teacher. A lot of us teachers will like read a big New York Times article or something in the Wall Street Journal about some new crisis with the kids. And you know what we want to say?
No kidding.
No kidding.
No kidding. You guys just now getting around to that? Wow.
That is exactly right. You're just now getting around to that. And that's what hollowed out. That's why I'm so passionate about the book, is I want people to read this so that they will be aware that we're talking about two big things. One, the inability of young people to live meaningful lives filled with happiness and joy, to understand that freedom is not just a license for self-indulgence. It is the choice to connect yourself to things that you believe in more than you believe in yourself. You got to give kids a license before you give them the car keys, and they just want the car keys. The second problem is this low level of patriotism, the way that young people look at their country, is, I think, highly, highly parasitic.
Yes.
And it's going to lead it to a point where we really can't conduct ourselves the way that a democracy has to conduct itself.
No, you've seen that with seemingly totalitarian direction. Everyone seems to be going. Legislative branches are frozen, and therefore we end up with individual sort of dictators just, you know, flying by the seat of their pants due to political expediency because people won't play nice together and resolve problems for the betterment of our country.
Wow. Yeah, the rise of the administrative state for the exact reason you're talking about. Exactly.
No, man. Jeremy Adams, this has been great. I'm glad you wrote it. Hollowed out, warning about the next America's next generation. Okay. You've highlighted the problems. You thumbnail sketch them for us. You do a great job in the book of further outlining the problems and where they come from. Real quick, give me a piece, or give my listeners rather, because my kids are adults now, give my listeners rather a piece of advice. I mean, go back to the family dinner, talk. I mean, what do you recommend?
There are a few things. But number one, like the big one is that the adults in our society have got to start adulting again. Stop trying to be a cool kid. Stop trying to be buddies and friends to your children or your students. Our kids need wisdom. They need guidance. They, you know, again,
That's
I wish
it.
I had more time for this, Brian. This would be great. Because in the book, I describe how this is the first generation in the history, I would say, of the world, who's figured out a way through their devices and their social media to live in a digital space where there are no adults.
Exactly.
And as a result, there is so much, there's vulgarity, violence, pornography, the things that young people are absorbing that we don't even know about. I mean, they are so far in front of us when it comes to technology. So the adults have to get into the space, the emotional space, the intellectual space, the physical space of young people again. The second thing I would say is this, and this is my political science background. You can be patriotic without believing that your country is perfect. You don't have to have a perfect country or a perfect history in order to have a lot of patriotism. And I could spend all day talking about that. Third thing I said – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say, I wish we had all day to talk, Jeremy. Maybe we should get you back on the show to even elaborate.
I would love to be back and talk some more. But I do hope people will buy Hollowed Out.
They will.
It is the great passion of my life is this book, and I really hope people will read it and share it. I'm not a famous person, so it's got to be a word-of-mouth book.
Oh, I always tell my listeners to share, and we always put authors' books on my blog page so all of my listeners know exactly where to go. That's 55krc.com. Get a copy, read it, share it with people, share it with everybody. Howl it out, a warning about America's next generation. God bless you, Jeremy Adams, for doing what you're doing. And again, I do hope we get a chance to talk again.
I hope so as well. Brian, thank you so much. Enjoy the nice weather.
Oh, without question, I'll enjoy it.